Oui, ça va.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Normally they are supposed to be here to go at the meeting. But on the exact list is indicated that it's correct.
Colleagues, we are waiting for the committee to correct short of one or two members to form a quorum. And we are also waiting for the IT fellow to come and assist us with the beaming of the report.
Joining us for the meeting this morning. All right, now that is fine. All right, thank you very much. Morning, Baba Bunjani. Are you joining us for the meeting this morning? It's Brian. V475. Yes, V in the old assembly, 475. I'm sorry? Yes, 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 on the first floor. But we can start. slow. Yes. How many meetings could you call that one? For that screen is way high in order to accommodate that screen. But then that inspects, we're still waiting for these guys to operate all these computers, unfortunately. You can say the thing is out of range.
Colleagues, may I welcome all of you to this meeting, and a special welcome to the minister. And I know she is attending a cabinet meeting, so she would walk out at any time. Thank you very much. Thank you very much that you came, even though you are not going to be with us for long. And also a welcome to DINEL colleagues from DINEL and the National Defense Industry Council and the Directorate under the NCACC. So we'll deal with those when we get to them. The presentation will be led by Mr. Tagwan and the Group Chief Operating Officer. And I guess the presentation from the NDIC and the DCAC will be led by the sector, the Secretary for Defense. He will also take us through the update on the DOD projects. Here we focus on working in progress. So after that, you will meet as a committee to adopt the minutes and the reports arising from our oversight visit. And then the last item will be the consideration and adoption of the 2020 program for the first term. So we'll start with the presentation by DINEL, and then later deal with the presentation by the sector on the two entities, the NDIC and the DACC, and of course an update on the DOD project, the working progress. DINEL, we have had meetings with the defense industry, and then you happen to be part of that meeting, even though you were not built to make a presentation on that day. And challenges experienced by Dinel were shared with us as a committee. And those challenges actually resulted in a large number of small but highly specialized local suppliers experiencing significant financial distress. And so we will deal with that. We also deal with the item that emerged sharply in one of our meetings, is Project Wolf Yester. And it was reported in one meeting that the project was delayed by more than 40 months. And at some point, I think it was 2018-2019, as a result of this delay, Dinel incurred 65 million rand of late delivery penalties. So we will look at that. We would also expect you to give us information on the latest engagement between Dinel and AMSCO around this particular project. It's been delayed for a long time. And that we even wonder, as a committee, whether the infantry fighting vehicles that were damaged as a result of this project and were still the best vehicles that we need. I mean, it's been very long since the thing was commissioned. Perhaps you'll talk to that. You may not be the right person to talk to it. Probably the Department of Defense that may want to talk to it. It was urgent and relevant at the time, and there's been a lot of time intervening. It's still the best, infantry fighting vehicle for the South African Army, but we'll deal with that when we get to it. And I've spoken about the penalties that you've incurred in 2018-2019. We also want to know whether you are not going to, be faced with some more penalties. Probably you just gave us information on the total amount of penalties and relating to this late delivery of this project. So we deal that with when we give the presentation. And the second point relates to the decline in the budget. AMSCOM shared that information with us, and that the acquisition budget is declining over the years. And we also know that the SDA in 2021, and will not be allocated the budget as it were. And we want to know the extent to which this problem will actually impact on Dinel's future financial stability. We are raising this point because we were told in this meeting that the DOD, the acquisition program of DOD, constitute about between 40 to 44% of your order book. And so we want you to share with us what the extent to which that will impact on your financial stability as the entity. and whether you do have maintenance contracts that are facing threats due to the limited funding that is coming from the DOD. Last time we were told that DOD would give you way ahead of time how much they would spend on the acquisition project, but over time, it was a year to year, basically impacting on your forward planning. And but now we know that the budget is fast declining, and the extent to which that will actually affect the maintenance contract and that you have with the Department of Defense. So these are things that we would expect you to touch on when we in your presentation, even if they are not in your presentation, but you talk to them. And as you finish your presentation. And so basically, in a sense, that's what we want to have a discussion with you around. And maybe the minister may want to say something now that she is here, and before I get to launch into your presentation. Honourable Minister.
Good morning, honourable members, and morning to the subjects and the representatives of DNEL, AMSCO, and the rest of the defence industry. Chairperson, the presentation which is about to be made by DNEL will be a presentation which will certainly touch on some of the challenges which we have encountered as Department of Defense in relation to some of the equipment that is being manufactured within the land. I do want to say that I am not here being a minister who is leading a dedication of the land. I am here because the Defense Industry is here. DNEL falls under the Department of Public Enterprises. I just come out of the cabinet committee, and I thought I should come and listen to the engagement between the committee and the rest of the defense industry. I am certain, Chair, that when the COO of DNEL makes his presentation to the committee, the COO will be able to indicate to the committee which one of the projects are behind, perhaps even touch on some of the areas where the Department of Defense tries to actually make advance payments on work which has not been done or completed. We do appreciate that there are significant strides which have been made now within DNEL. We do appreciate that the minister has appointed a new board. Not only that, there's also been an appointment of a CEO, and I'm aware, Chairperson, that there is interaction between AMSCO and DNEL through the CEO of DNEL and the CEO of AMSCO, respectively. So a number of some of the challenges which we may have had are being sorted out, and I'm happy that the CEO of AMSCO is part of the delegation because he may be able to point out which one of those projects are still outstanding. Chair, I've heard you mention projects or work in progress with ASTEL. I am certain that between Arms Corps and DMEL and the Department of Defense, you will be able to get some kind of progress made. And yes, it is true, Chair, that we are behind in terms of the timeline and agreement which was set between ourselves, Arms Corps, and DMEL. And therefore, I want to make a plea that even as we talk about work which has been done, progress made, significant milestones reached, that we should avoid a detailed discussion on the actual specification of the project, but rather confine ourselves, Chair, I'm not being prescriptive, confine ourselves to the challenges which we have had and money which has been spent on the project. I think that those are the remarks I would like to make, Chair. And Chair, I will be here and I will be ready together with the rest of the team to take perhaps field some of the questions.
Thank you so much. And that then, together with what I said, set the tone for this meeting as it relates to your presentation, sir. Over to you. But just before I do that, I forgot to note a few apologies. My apologies. There's an apology from the Deputy Minister of Defense. And there's an apology from Honorable Holy Minister, an apology from Honorable Tebe Kulu, who's not well, and an apology from Honorable Lefwase, and there's also an apology from the Minister and the Deputy Minister of Public Enterprises. So those are the apologies we are making today. Are there any apologies coming that we might not have recorded? Or Mr. Marke is in another committee meeting. So that takes care of the apologies.
Yes, sir.
I know you have also sent in an apology on behalf of your CEO. Maybe you want to talk to that?
Yes, sir. The apology from the chief executive of the Netherlands, he is unable to make it. We had a strategy session that started yesterday and today. As well as the entire office of the members of the association, which has been doing shopping.
No, thank you very much. Let me also note, recognize the presence of the acting CEO of AMSCO. It's present today. It's accompanied by so one board member, yes, plus other members of the executive in AMSCO. We'll do the introduction should that become necessary. And Mr. Tekwane is here together with one of the shareholders' representative. You introduced him before you launch into your presentation so that we know who is here representing the United States.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you to the members of the portfolio committee, the minister, my colleagues in ASCO, the rest of the defense industry. My shareholder representative is Wiken Bagani, sitting right behind me. It's from DPD. Thanks again, Chair, for giving me the opportunity. I know the fact that...
Sorry, I also recognize the COO of MDS. AMD. My apologies. Thank you so much.
I think your colleagues are here from something the rest of the industry that face.
Yes, they're present.
Correct. Thank you very much, Chef. Once again, thank you for giving me the opportunity. I take note of the concerns raised. I took note of the point, Chair, that you sort of raised this morning. I also took note when I attended the meeting as an invite. IT into this particular committee on the 6th of November. So I made some notes and enhanced the presentation, although the presentation won't cover the details to the point at which you can sort of allude to in your own chair. However, I'll cover them in a summary, if that is okay with you. And I take note of the fact that we are asked to come to this particular committee and present our general strategy to this committee and present the challenges that the member faced or is facing and have the presentation. So I'll start with the presentation, then if you want. So the presentation will cover the introduction, which is structured and plans, which is the military plans, the progress made to date in terms of the general strategy, the business development, the lessons learned and the questions. So some of the aspects that I looked at what the minister said that we shouldn't cover the details. In fact, what I've done is that I've tried to summarize some of the challenges that we're having in this presentation, but not going into a specific project details. So I'll cover the four points in the presentation, Chair. If I may introduce myself again, I'm the Chief Operating Officer for the NET. I started in July, the 1st of July 2019. So it's been 5 months. In the introduction, Chair, I'm saying the board is confident that the NELCOR technological products, basic systems and skills are critical and required for effective crisis and turnaround of the NELCOR in the future. However, we were faced with the challenges, and some of them are challenges that deals with the liquidity, the constraints, that you know I'm quite sure that the public and the rest of the committee members are aware of, that we are trying to overcome. Some of those are unprofitable sales, loss-making contracts, including onerous contracts, and some of these are contracts that we are trying to move away from. Some of the challenges lead to the higher costs with declining revenues, poor inventory cash management, high dependency on larger complex contracts, which do not proceed as planned. Take note of the fact that you know both system is part of it. Lack of basic financial discipline and internal control. These are all the internal matters that we sort of found, you know, when we sort of started in the land. There was poor governance, there was mismanagement, there was over dealers and expensive acquisition and general corruption, as you know, on the Super Commission with regards to the Russia and the VR later group. So some of those things I think that are in the public domain that you all know of, that we are still dealing with. So since the appointment of the board in May 2018, the board has tried to improve the governance and try to execute the turnaround strategy that the board has developed. So interim measures were implemented in terms of the appointment of the interim group chief financial officer at the time. Since January 2019, we have appointed the group chief executive officer, the GCO, the group HR, and the group CFO. You note that these are four group executives of the NET. This is the four executives from a total of 15. So initially, the NET used to have 15 executives sitting at the executive level. So we have reduced that number to four. In fact, it's five, except the communication that we have not appointed an executive. So this is part of the general strategy that the NET has sort of embarked on. So with the recap received from the shareholder, we have tried to sort of consolidate, you know, the executive management in order to address some of the liquidity issues in the business. So just to give you the glances, all in the public domain again, you check. This is the result, the financial results of the today. You know that, you know, our revenues have declined from 5.8 to 3.8 billion. You know, our cash has also declined from 1.3 billion to 5.5 million in the last financial year. If you look at our equity, debt equity, we are really highly debt and indebted. If you look at the borrowings have risen up from 2.3 billion to 2.4 billion, and our net profit loss, you know, is from 1 billion to 1.7 billion.
R&D expenditure, sort of anything from 769 million to 108 million. And if you look at the social side on the skills development, we have spent 32 million in the last financial year, which is 89 financial year. And the corporate social investment has gone down from 9.4 million to 593. And the employee numbers, as I've shared with you, that as part of the general strategy, we're trying to sort of reduce the numbers in the business from 4,631 to 10,968. And this figure might also go further down as we are still trying to reposition our business. The black on space grew from 640 million to 470 million, and transformation on the BEE is at 8.6. We are trying to improve it, I think, by next day, which will be at level 5 or 4. And this is some of the improvements that we are trying to make in the business. If you look at the female appointments in the business, they have risen from 44% to 58%. So we are doing that in the card, the HR appointment, they're still the same at 52%. This is just the financial statement involved. I didn't jump into the details of the financial statement. And the progress made, Chair, with regards to the governance structure, I have alluded to the fact that the CEO was appointed in January, which is 2020. Myself as the CEO of the company, and the HR executive were appointed in July 2019. And subsequently, we appointed the CFO, which is coming in France in September 2019. And further on, we have appointed the internal auditors, which is EY, in September. And now, with all the ESCO members, which is four or five, except the communication executive, which is not appointed, which is now being the top five. That appointment is still to be made in the next couple of months. In improving the governance structure, we introduced the new delegation of authority framework, which is what we are trying to enhance in the business. We are improving the delegation of authority. We realize that we made some losses as a result with the progress of the expenditure. So we are trying to tighten controls in the DOA. This is what we are improving. I think it's sitting in the board today for approval from the administration chair. We are trying yesterday to address the process in the expedition of the customer. And then we are also trying to look into the supply chain policies as part of the internal controls and governance. We are improving on that. We have taken that to various committees of approval, which is the Finance and Investment Committee and the Risk Committee for approval, and also sitting at the board today for approval, which is the supply chain policy. So this is part of the governance structure. Chair that they're trying to deploy in the next. If you look at the plan, Chair, to date we have taken orders of 7.8 billion, which is the current financial year, 2018-2019 financial year, compared to 519 million, Chair. We still got orders of around 30 billion in the 24-month window that we are still chasing, Chair. Those contracts are not the first part of the contract that we're pursuing, in the business. And yes, we have the secured corporate plan that we have presented to the board. We have a backlog order of 17.4 billion that is covering roughly 4 years of work in the net. This is one bullet I've never wanted to talk about, but because if they are talking about it, we have that order of 6.3 billion. Which makes up the 7.8 billion, which is part of that 6.7 billion. This is the largest order ever in the area that we sort of received in this order. There's a potential market share that we're looking at, and we know that the NEL brand is still respected worldwide, and we're still trying to leverage on that and ensure that we take the NEL to its former glory and ensure that all the controls are in place. The brand is well positioned in the market. So we are trying as far as possible to change the sort of approach to ensure that the level is still respected for what it used to be. We have the solid support from our customer, which is DOD. They've been supporting us
said, I think you have alluded to the maintenance contract, and that, you know, has been able to keep us afloat, and specifically with OTR, OTR is the very specialized sort of the unit of our corporate division, say, and I think it's very relevant to DOD, and DOD has been very supportive in terms of ensuring that, you know, we have sustainable maintenance contracts that you have, and then in other various disciplines in aviation as well, and we have maintenance contracts that are valued there that, you know, our local customer will be supporting us. With regards to the onerous contract, I know the question was asked by one of the honorable ministers with regards to the Airbus A400 in the last meeting. I think it's you, honorable minister. Yes, it is part of this 250 contract that we are trying to honorable member. My apologies. I'm not used to sitting in here, so I get confused. So the Airbus contract is the one that we are trying to get out of. There was a strategic decision that was taken by the country some few years back with regards to ensuring that we have a manufacturing plant in South Africa where we can manufacture certain parts for Airbus. However, with a decline in the defense, you know, expenditure worldwide, we sort of never had enough volumes to continue with that part of the business. So we're bringing $250 million per annum on that business, and we have taken the strategic decision to move away from that business. In fact, it is closing down. We have applied for a section 189, which has been approved, and therefore we'll be proceeding with the winding down of that business. We have mitigated against the parent company guarantees of 1.6 billion. I think, Chair, you have alluded to the fact that, you know, we have penalties, and some of those penalties are all part of the guarantees. So we are trying to mitigate against the Chair as far as possible and ensuring that we still stay in line of what we have contracted on. We are trying to reduce the operating costs, Chair, by 500 million, and this operating cost, they were mainly sitting on the labor side, which is the part of the reduction from 4,900 to 2,600 share. We have reduced the corporate structure by 15 million, so I'm saying from 15 executives to sort of the 4 executives today. We have solid skills base of 620 development engineers and technicians in our workforce share, with average experience of 15 years. We have 1,740 technicians and operators in manufacturing and support operations. So we still continue with the general check. We have potential to generate cash from divesting part of the non-core assets to the tune of 1.56 billion. If we can just prosecute part of our the bailout, I don't know if we are putting the bailout. From the government, the 1.8 billion that we have received. Part of the conditions were that we need to divest some of the non-core business, and we are trying to do exactly that. So we have potential of generating 1.5 billion when we move out of those assets that are non-core. And we have potential to generate cash from the strategic equity partners. I'll show you a slide, which is part of our future state, where we demonstrate, you know, the way the strategic equity partners will play a role in assisting us to keep the business afloat. So we're looking at around 2 billion for that. Yes, we have reduced the operating costs at 500 million. There's 40 expressions of interest to partner with GNL and acquire some part of GNL. We have excellent return on investment. And
the minister will take me. She wanted to stay with us for a long time. Unfortunately, she was called up to another meeting.
Okay.
So shall we have the high probability of unlocking the voter cell, which is widely spoken about. Maybe if I can just pause again on the voter cell and just go back to, you know, just summarize in terms of the engagement set. And I think the current acting chief of the chief executive officer of the Thomas Ford Lavis today, we had a joint press committee that was last week on the 19th of November, wherein it was the second one. I think the first one was in July. This is the second meeting that we're having. In that meeting, we have raised that specifically because we're discussing various issues with regards to the health.
Okay, but we do have hard copies. Like I don't have a screen before me. I'm following it on the hard copies. Do you have hard copies? That is the continuous to do this. Atulo, does the sector have hard copies? You do. Hold on.
So while at in Hotel Percent, we had our second meeting with the council in discussing various projects and some other matters related to the Nelem Council. And we have agreed to have our first meeting specifically zooming into Hotel. I think this is the first week of December. To really zoom into the hospital and see what is it that we can get up between the men and arms for with regards to that particular program. So the engagements are continuing, Chair. I cannot bring specifics because we have not agreed in specifics on the hospital. We have discussed it, we have discussed the challenges between the two parties on matters with regards to the schedule, with regards to the financing of the hospital, both phase one and phase two, and the continuation of that program. And once the decision has taken and has been seen, we saw it happen to school of transportation.
Perhaps if you will need to tell us what caused the delay. And I know that this is not the only project. The minister alluded that there are some projects where you are behind. And three, we also know it was presented in our meeting that there are some projects that have been pushed to the right. They have been pushed to that.
Yeah.
And the direct interest in those projects that they affect the office. So we'll speak to those
in
greater detail at the end of the presentation.
Correct.
Yes. Can I support you to the chairperson? I think those information that you say that you will come back, I mean, that's just not on, with all due respect. You know, this is a meeting coming on for very long, and we need to know where you stand with regards to Oester. So you must share a bit. So like the minister has even said, that you have to share with us, you know, the financing, you know, where's the financing coming from, how much have we, or did we advance money, how long is the delay still, because, you know, these things are hanging in the air for just too long. We can wait because the next meeting, let's be realistic, will only be sometime next year, February, March. Then it's another half
Mr.
year
Murray,
gone.
He will come back to those towards after he has completed his turnaround strategy. Yes.
Thank you. We have put potential chair of improving our program delivery chain. Which is led by myself, and yesterday I presented the strategy to our shareholders with regards to the program delivery decisions set. We also have potential improvement of human capital capability. And the strategic financing, you know, led by our GCFO. And yes, Chair, I can say we have a capable management team to actually deliver on this turnaround plan. If you look at the net products and capabilities share, we still have capabilities under artillery, security, and border control, and these are some of the problems that the net is producing. Under artillery, the G6 gun, the
Various of them, I'm not going to go to the details of this, and I think the members can just go to the details. But this is a capability that the NET has in the naval space, in the aerospace, in the infantry space, and of course, yes, in training, maybe they are training young engineers and activists, you know, and to fulfill some of the obligations in our program. So, as we transition to the future stage, Chair, what you see, which is sitting on the outside, on that slide, which is the dark blue, where you read the other structure, the foundry, the property, the gear issue, S3, medium, space tech, LMT, then secure, products. This is our all non-core business that the NEM is trying to move up. This is a 1.5 billion that I'm talking about today. This is a non-core business, and it's part of that bail out some of the business that we have to move away from. And then if you look at what is sitting on the inside, way in on the left hand side, I say this is the strategic equity partners. We spoke about the potential to raise about 2 billion on the strategic equity partnership. And we actually need an aircraft and engine MRO chair on the way back for them. And it has been raised again in the last meeting. In munitions, in the UAVs, in maritime, MRO and armored vehicles. So here we are saying, if we can get strategic equity partners that can, you know, invest in some of these businesses, we can keep the level afloat. And then there's an overback test range that I've spoken about earlier to say it's very strategic to DOD. This is what we are keeping as a strategic business. And then inside, this is our core, where in the say the missile business and the PGMs, our business, our artillery systems, our infantry systems, system integration. We are level 5 system integrator chair, and we are very good at it, and something that, you know, we are competing among the best in the world. And again, on the time. So what is sitting in the middle, this is what we say, this is our core business, and we want to keep it within the name. It's sovereign in nature, and we don't want anyone to touch it. However, what is sitting on the outside, on the strategic equity partnership, it's not sovereign in nature, and however we are saying, it's something that, you know, we can partner with any party to develop some of the technologies, you know, around there. So what you see in the middle is what we hope to achieve as the NEL, as a future state, wherein we say this is what makes the core of the NEL. This is the sovereign capability that we're keeping on behalf of the country and the strategic in that direction. So moving to the private sector and the SEPs, on the capital side, Chair, yes, we have the ability to invest in that equity based on our intellectual property. We are trying to exploit that in that regard through arms control, of course. On the market, we are trying to access, you know, additional markets, you know, for growth. I'll share a slide with you on the business development chair on that. On technology side, Chair, there are specific expertise and support, you know, that we need in order for us to expand, you know, the portfolio in demand. And of course, yes, we'll try as far as possible to protect, you know, the existing jobs within demand. However, with the liquidity issues, in the now position, you know, at some point in time, we have to move away from other businesses and ensure that, you know, we keep ourselves afloat. So a lot of the jobs will be saved, but we try as far as possible to protect all the jobs in South Africa because we know the conditions of unemployment in the country. And of course, yes, there are positive impacts with regard to the sustainability and supportability of capabilities. That requires a sovereign control and hence I said, Chair, what you saw, what is sitting in the middle, is sovereign of nature, and we take note of that, and we try to compensate as far as possible. Business development, in the last meeting, the defense industry has adhered to the fact that we are facing threats in certain markets. This is the order intake that we required in the last meeting to come and present to you, Chair. If you look on the left-hand side, when I say various markets, some of it is sitting in the country, some of it is sitting out of the country, but it's a very proportion, it's about a billion in respect of orders that we're chasing. This is the 30 billion that we're talking about, Chair. But this is over the period of 5 years. If you look at the UAE market share, we are looking at around 2 billion of orders. Sweden is very little, I think about 200 million. If you look at South Africa, which is partly, mostly DOD, we are looking at around 4 billion of orders that we are chasing in the next 5 years, Chair. If you look at Oman, we are sitting at around 16 billion. The KSA, we are looking at around 14 billion. So we have about 30 billion, which is sitting outside of the government.
What is the case?
Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. So the two of them, if you look at Oman, the KSA and the UAE, so this is the UAE and the Middle East, they make a bigger proportion of the order that we're chasing. And then if you look at South Africa, it's very minimal compared to the Middle East and the UAE. And then you have India, which is very minute in nature. So if you look at the pie chart and you look at RSA on the orange block, the yellow block, it's probably close to 12% of the entire order that we are chasing in the next 5 years. The rest of them are sitting outside of the country. So this is the business that we are chasing outside of South Africa, and it is a result, again, Chair, of the constraints faced by DOD in terms of the acquisition process. Going to procurement spend, Chair, this is the 4-year window, Chair. You know that in 2016 we spent around 4.2 billion, 2017 4.8, 2018 3 billion, 2019 about 1.8 billion. So the figure is sort of a sliding down because of possible liquidity issues. So there's been less expenditure in procurement. And as a result, you know, the local industry, so the state industry, has been suffering a lot of money. And here the figures check. The 1.8 billion spent on the local business, 417.5 black owned business, 308 million spent on female owned businesses, 20 million youth owned businesses, 2.1 million. This is on the military veterans owned businesses, 47.2 million spent on the business that are owned and managed by black people with disabilities, and 485 million on the macro enterprise and qualifying small enterprises for matching. So this is just a breakdown of what we have spent today. So Chair, coming to lesson learned, and I'll try and also summarize the issues that have been raised. The challenges, the strategic challenges, Chair, that we face as the land, we have taken note that, you know, the poor governance practices and financial mismanagement. The NEL ESCO was undermined in terms of decision making, inappropriate investment decision chain, weak supply chain, and so on. So the improvements that we have done in that regard, Chair, the board was appointed last year in May, and on 4 years we have tried to stabilize, you know, the executive team. If we look at the program execution, Chair, the issues relating to poor risk management, level of consequence risk management, low productivity, and there are various issues with regards to the skill set. You know, we have taken note of the fact that, you know, some of the people have been doing there were duplication of roles, Chair, when specifically coming to the work of the program. I have done what then I call sort of a deep dive into who Festival, trying to understand exactly what is it that went wrong. What we have found in who Festival, Chair, to answer some of the questions was that at the time when the contract was signed, we had low levels of program managers trying to secure every contract on behalf of the DNA. Without them going through all of these government structures and ensuring that we have enough skills to execute, both on the support side and as well as the program side, which is the program which is on the design side, the support side, it's all your financial managers, your cost controllers, your cost engineers, and everybody that forms part of the program delivery, sort of the management portfolio, that was 90%. This is what resulted into the delay. This is what resulted in the cost overruns. We have people that were doing a bit of everything. We have an engineer who was acting as a contract administrator, they acted as a financial manager. So there were duplication of works, which in a project environment, you cannot just have that. If you want to employ governance and ensure that governance exists, you ensure that people that are doing cost engineering, which are people that are measuring what you have been contracted on, what you have delivered on against your budget. Those are cost engineers that we got to. We don't have cost engineers. And part of our presentation yesterday to the strategic committee to ensure that we employ those cost engineers as part of the way forward. That we have the cost engineers, we don't have contract managers. So the contract was sent to the contract managers. And this is part of the governance structure that we're trying to employ and ensure that we solidify, you know, the program portfolio and enhance it in such a way that we can still deliver on the goal of the program. So these are some of the things that we're managing to say, and we are trying to mitigate the impact. To answer your question as to what is it that caused all of this, it's exactly that duplication of roles. People were doing a bit of everything and doing something that they were not qualified to do. And of course, yes, we contracted, not knowing exactly what it is that we contracted for. And I'm sure maybe they might have made certain assumptions in terms of delivery schedule without really ensuring that we had enough skill sets to actually deliver all the programs. And hence the delays and the cost of our action. But we are trying to mitigate it. So if you look on the left, on the right hand side, this is exactly what I'm doing. Ensuring that you take our risk idea, we have done the risk analysis specifically on the whole business model that we have presented to the joint expo team. And we have put a position paper forward in terms of the way forward on the program that we have discussed, that we further discussed with them. We have discussed the issues related to those cost overruns, resource allocation, share, the risk management, the program management controls, and the effectiveness. Share. These are some of the things that we non-existent, and we are trying to mitigate the response. Limited market access and declining order book, Chair. You have seen the slides that are presented in the 5-year window. There are some areas of interest with regards to one sitting in the UAE and the Middle East. And then I'm sure the sector will touch base on the issues that we are raising with the Pacific UEC. But that's where the risk is sitting on today. If we do not make all those contracts, the future becomes bleak for the United. So we are refocusing on the market research and intelligence so that we improve order intake and letters for that chain. And of course, yes, we are trying as far as possible to partner and one of the other members in the position to say what is it that we are doing with SOEs. We are partnering with a whole lot of SOEs chain for both Transnet and Prasa, specifically on the UAV side to ensure that we don't tell the trends and so forth. But that is a work in progress. We're also trying to partner with SAA in terms of the some
maintenance, you know that we are in the defense industry, and we have not ventured into the commercial aspects of the aviation, but something that we are trying to sort of explore as part of the basically ourselves out of the defense industry and moving into the more commercial aspects. And yes, we have the support of our shareholders. Still continuing, Chair, with the lessons learned. We have an unstable cost base, Chair. In as much as we have reduced the 500 million cost over the last 12 months, yes, we are still in the red zone. We are trying as far as possible to move out of that red zone. And yes, we are still constrained in terms of liquidity, and we are improving on that capital management, including improvements in cash, for measure of the process. But I think we have these discussions with Transco as well to then say, some of the cash that is coming out of us, so I think you have alluded to the fact that you know, the heavy process that has been spent on what is it that we are doing. We are trying to reinforce that chair to ensure that we deliver on those programs. Previously, cash was just moving into A1 single account, we did this best, you know, and whichever we develop the cash we do. What we are trying to do to mitigate that is us not meeting the budget and the schedule, we are trying to reinforce some of those costs to ensure that. Yes, Chair, we were unfocused and fragmented in terms of the operational structure, leading to the overhead cost. We are trying now to have a new operational structure, sort of which is more reduced. We have seen in corporate, we have reduced from 50 to 5 executives. We are trying to do exactly the same thing into operations. It's home operated. We are trying to reduce the number in operations to ensure that it's more focused. And it's efficient. And we know that you know in supply chain we are very weak, and we are trying to strengthen you know, the supply chain with regards to the policy and improving on the procurement binders on the supply chain. Yes, we are misaligned in terms of the stakeholder environment, DPE or DOD, DPE, National Treasury, and others. And I think with the new management, and I think it was for the first time. But since we came in, we had the first joint ESCO with Transco, something that never existed before we had it in July, and we are continuing with that to ensure that we keep the stakeholder close to us. DOD does exactly the same thing, we're more far away from DOD, we are doing that stakeholder engagement. With our shareholder, which is DPE, we are giving monthly meetings with DPE, we are reporting on the progress made with the general strategy and all the other various issues related to the management of the year. So we have strengthened the stakeholder environment. This is basically my presentation, Chair, and I'm not sure if there are any other questions. I'm sure that we spoke earlier on some of the issues related to the stakeholder with regards to the finances, Chair, as you can see, I've never covered the details in terms of what was spent and what was not spent. I think some of the things you are using today, Chair, and we have covered everything in Asher and summarized it in this presentation.
Thank you so much. You delve a bit into the Wolfsteer project, and this is fine, but of course I welcome a specific question in that regard. But you also said that you have ring-fenced funds for capital projects so as to protect those that you have contracts with. But you have not given us information on the exact projects that you will move to the right. I hope I'm using that, and the value of that project, and why you have to be moved to the right. I mean, we have an interest in that. I mean, when the budget is reportedly going down, and would want to ensure that every cent that is given to the department, right, and is spent wisely. Every rand is spent, every single cent of the rand is spent. And so that is our take. And two,
the minister was very specific that giving you advance payments, and you may want to indicate to us how much of that is still unaccounted for by Sunel, so that we're then able to follow it up. I mean, it's money paid, but we have not seen any work done or delivered as required. So we want information on that. I mean, if you have it, present it. If you don't, then we'll find a way of getting you to give us that information. It's very critical insofar as this portfolio committee is concerned. You have 40% of 40 to 44% of the order book of this department, and we have a direct interest in how you are spending in that regard. Mr. Marais, you wanted to say something?
Can I pose my questions?
Yes, or perhaps let's open up for questions, colleagues, so that they can deal with all of those at the same time. Mr. Marais, your question.
Thank you. I just want to start by saying thank you very much for this. I want to support the chairperson in everything that he has said, and you will probably know that I'm very, very determined on those in terms of accountability. We've heard in the past about money being transferred to you and no work being done, or no achievements being done, or no product being delivered. In the meantime, we sit with a decreased budget, so you know, it's all around predicament, and we cannot have a situation where money is being moved out and no performance or achievements against that. That is just unacceptable. That has to be turned around immediately. Also want to say that although maybe you would like to respond to a situation, you know, because we often deal with that, is it the best for the Nell to be a bank with DOD or with state-owned enterprises? And I'm honest with you, sometimes I feel that our colleagues in state-owned enterprises do not understand the defense industry. And maybe they might not have the empathy that we have with regards to the defense industry. And maybe it's not justice not been done. But that is just a vital way. I want to start off my questions by things that you haven't said or haven't mentioned. One is, and it's very relevant lately, end user certificate and the limitations with regards to the inspections. It's been reported all over lately, and the frustration by the private sector manufacturers. And I have read where you apparently are liaising with Iraq that you will comply with all their requirements. Now, will be interesting to know whether that specific end user certificate and the requirement of inspections is no concern of theirs. I've also read where Saudi, which seems to be a huge role player, is looking elsewhere because they get frustrated by this end user certificate, specifically with regards to inspections, that they are not happy with. So you haven't touched on that, you haven't mentioned that, and that is a real threat for South Africa and obviously yourself and eventually us as well. Then secondly, with regards to the aerospace, and specifically, you've just briefly touched on that as core activities, and you've only mentioned the Rafale. I think the two other things that was of importance to me, at least, was the Oryx, because that's a very reliable product, but we know the platform and the technology is also starting to get older. And we know that we have seen at Aston Plant where if they take that top structure off, they could only send it to the Nell for maintenance. We need to know that, you know, because it seems like Oryx is not your priority anymore if I look at that schedule. And we need to know that because we are very reliant on that. Then, in terms of the intellectual property of the Department of Defense, I remember from the past, submissions by both the department and by Arms Corps, where it was an issue that obviously you make use of the intellectual property of the defense force or the government. Now, sometimes it is, and I've also read lately that some of these IPs have been lost or been transferred, so it is obviously important to know in terms of the intellectual property of South Africa with regards to the defense industry and manufacturing, whether that is protected and whether that is still in the Arms Court books or whether you've taken it on asset in your book. Then the chairperson has referred to the Hoefeister, the Badger, and the ministers also referred to it. We obviously must have more information. The last presentation that we have had, it was indicated that there's a 46 or 47 month delay. Now whether it's a further delay or from the original starting, so if we can get an indication, because whether there will really be a, because it's indicated here that delivery might start at 2023. So that is really a 4-year, 48 month delay from date. And one of my concerns is the original technology and the specs of Hoefeister was obviously designed at that stage. But we know that there has been so much development taking place in the meantime. Whether that specs will be updated or whether it will be most probably outdated technology that will be delivered to us, which means that it's probably bad value for money. On the Hoefeister and Badger, just a theoretical question. Is it still possible to stop Hoefeister and or amend the order for Hoefeister? And the mere why I'm only saying that is, and that will link to a next question of mine is, we know that the NEL was formed in a time to provide munition for conventional warfare situations. In terms of our current situation, we are not in a conventional warfare situation, and we know that the Rattle and the Badger is an infantry fighting vehicle, whereas there might be requirements for armored patrol vehicles. We know that the Badger we can't even use in the DRC. So in terms of if needs change, can that be amended as well? Because it might be quite different from the past. Then my next one with regards to R&D. To what extent do you cooperate and work together with Arms Corps, CSIR, and even South African Bureau of Standards? Only reason I'm asking this is to see whether we should at one stage consider rationalization of R&D. Because it's costing us a lot of money, it's very, very important, but it might become unaffordable for each one to do it on their own, and whether there should be rationalization or not. My next point with regards to finances, I obviously would like to know, as the chair said, in terms of prepayments, for what are we at risk, and that we haven't received anything, so it is very, very important. I also want to find out with regards to the order book that you have shown, and the order that seen in isolation seems fantastic. But there's another thing that you require is working capital. And although you indicated that there will be ring fencing, we know that one of the reasons why the Hoefeister has not come to fruition yet is precisely because of working capital. So you must also maybe take us into your confidence and tell us which of those are at risk, because that even at 6.3 billion sounds fantastic, but you haven't got the working capital to manufacture that and deliver that means nothing. So we need to know what is the situation there. In terms of, if I look at that slide, the NEL products and capabilities, you have indicated in another slide that cyber becomes very important. What is that cyber technology program that you are looking at or starting? And to what extent have there been discussions between the DoD and Arms Corps and yourself with regards to cyber technology development. I get the impression from questions in the past that not much has been done, although we have got quite extraordinary cyber technology experts in South Africa, whether it's in the NEL, Arms Corps, and even the Military Academy, but there are quite extraordinary matters there. On that second group that you've given, security and border control, we know that there's a huge difference between border control and border patrol. The border management bill that is coming in will probably be looking at the points of entry, whereas the DOD and the SNDF will be responsible for the areas in between those points of entry. So that is not control, but that is patrol, and obviously reconnaissance and like that. So I need to know to what extent are you involved in that or not.
So involved in that area.
Then with regards to your slide that you've given us, the now future state, and my question is, what cooperation are there with the private sector? Because we know that the NEL is suffering currently. The private sector, I think, has got a complaint that the NEL cannot supply necessarily what they want. On the other hand, some of the products might be easier produced with the private sector. So what kind of cooperation is there? And then have you done any exercises or plans or strategic analysis on the movement from, in terms of South Africa, movement from then conventional warfare to more a peaceful regional stability and border protection and control? I've asked you the question on the on the end user certificate. On the NATO barriers, you've indicated that the NATO having barriers to entry. What are those barriers to entry? Because we know that there are the UN Convention on the Control and Trading of Munition, which we have taken a bit too far, in my opinion, with the end user certificates requiring inspections. But normally the NATO must also comply with the UN regulations. So to what extent is there then barriers to entry in the NATO? My last question is, where you have indicated on that last slide that you are awaiting an additional 1 billion rand recap. Is that over and above the bailout, as you have mentioned it, of 1.8 billion rand? Or is it part of that 1.8 billion rand? And if you are getting that 1 billion rand, even if it's additional, to what extent will you then be independent, if I can use it that, from further bailouts and funding from government? Thank you very much, sir.
Okay, thanks. My colleagues, are there any further questions? Okay, maybe
at this stage,
reflect on this and then move. We'll then take another round of questions.
Thank you very much, sir. I wanna go back to the slide where you mentioned the EUC limitations. When I presented this particular slide, which is the intake over the 5 years, and I said Oman and KSA will be a whole in the Middle East. That's when we're having the limitations with the EUC. So hence I said, if you look at those bar charts, we are having something like a 30 billion of order book that we're expecting in the next 5 years. So if the EUC is not resolved, then it means that we have to look at elsewhere for the market.
So is the EUC that is the problem, or is the post, or is the post delivery inspection?
It is for us to be able to capture this particular market. EUC is the issue, as you have to do to the fact that the Saudis do not want this EUC. I mean, that's where the market is for us. So if they refuse to be inspected, to mean that we won't get any business. So it will mean that there won't be any business for the land within this one.
Yes, I know that we have defected, will be taking us through the presentation, and amongst these things that we'll touch on is the EU safety and the post-delivery inspection. Let's leave that to that time, the AEC and the post-delivery inspection. I think it's fine for him to say that.
Chairperson, we have got that next week for the NCAC. NCACC meeting as well.
No. Yes, but today we have the directorate. The directorate of the NCACC. Thanks.
Yes, sir. And I think the sector will deal with the EUC issue. I was just highlighting this, what the rest of the industry have highlighted in the last presentation, to say this is what is affected. This is what we are, that's where we are affected. Coming to the aerospace, Chair, I just want to go back to this particular slide where I presented the future state. And you make mention that I only mentioned Roifarc and I don't mention Forex. The reason why Roifarc is mentioned here, specifically Roifarc, we have various products. I mean, we are doing maintenance for CFPT, the Forex and so forth, for DOD. And we are okay with DOD with the consumer. Roifarc specifically, you know that it has never been sold for $7,000. So the reason why we are saying we seek a strategic partner to develop it further to the MAP 2, which is the advanced model of the Roifarc. We want to develop it in such a way that we can be able to market the domestic partner of South Africa, hence especially in a particular flight as a product that we want to have a partner to fund, you know, the further development in the Roifarc. The rest of the other maintenance and support we are giving to the and then with regards to the IP, and yes, of course, we have done an exercise to look into the procurement of the IP emanating from what we have seen in the newspaper and so forth. I have to mention that there is an IP which is owned by Armscor, there is an IP which is owned by the NAC. And the IP which is owned by Armscor, we do make note of the fact that we ask permission to use the specific IP within the written product related to the specific IP. And then there is that relationship between us and Armscor on how to exploit that specific. What is sitting in our in the newspapers in terms of the IP that has been stolen, and I think the chief executive of Armscor did allude to the fact that as far as we stand with what has been in the newspapers, we have done our own investigation internally. They have done their own investigation internally, and they have found nothing. If there's any new evidence that suggests otherwise, we'll really, you know, we welcome it. But as far as we're concerned, with those specific ones, we did investigate internally, Armscor did investigate, and the outcome was that there was nothing really tangible with what was being said. But of course, there was a proclamation by the president to say they will investigate further through the SIU, and we'll await that feedback and we will take that investigation. And then we'll provide the necessary information for them to take the information. And with regards to the whole paper and more detail, I'm not quite sure if my colleagues from Armscor can help me with the details. I'm not quite sure if the details, and we can share them specifically with everybody to that level that we do at the program, because what is required here is what we understand at the program level with regards to the delays, the funding, how much is spent, and so forth. But I've not prepared that, Chair. I am not prepared for this particular meeting. If you can, I'll tell you how are quite aware that, you know, some information because of the media is not talk about it, you know, yes, correct, yes. We need to have a different conversation to discuss the specific detail. With regards to the R&D, Honourable Marek, yes, there is an ongoing sort of a collaboration with specifically with AMSCO. AMSCO is actually helping us on the technology side to actually develop technology further. And we are doing a lot of investment, you know, on that front. And of course, yes, we're working with CSIR in terms of technical development as well. The reason being that we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We try as far as possible to see where in the new technology, all of us will come under one stakeholder, and we actually work together towards the development thereof. Where in the customer can find a technology, for example, specifically for example with GeoPark, we know what needs to be done in there. But of course, yes, we don't have money to actually spend, and hence we are moving the route of the OCP to find that technology. So there are methods that we're employing to ensure that, you know, there's co-funding where possible. And of course, yes, with regards to the SAPS, the one that is missing, we have not done anything with the SAPS at the moment. And of course, we're looking into it as we mentioned. That was on the rationalization side. With regards to the payment, on the finances of the prepayment, we will also put it under one stakeholder and discuss it on different forums specifically because it deals with the specific. Obviously, we have to take not only MOFES, there are various programs that we are running with and we have to take that list and really give you the account of each of them, how much has been paid, how much, you know, have been sort of claimed, what is it sustained after the budget, how far are we in fact on that specific program. We'll have this as well. Coming to the order book on the working capital, yes, Chair, indeed, we are at a state where we are in. We know that, you know, at some point in time, where the brink of collapse, and purely because we didn't have working capital. If you look at the 1.8, we actually requested 2.8, we only got 1.8. And out of the 1.8 that we received, at the time that we received the 1.8, the rest of the industry was suffering. We owed suppliers close to 900 million, which was close to a billion when we received the 1.8 million. That is only for the suppliers. I'm not talking about the SARS, because we owed SARS at the time, there's contracts that we owed. So if you look at the 1.8 billion, if you were to take that 1.8 billion and disperse it at once, we'll have had nothing. So part of the strategic decision that we took was that we'll have to sort of strategize on how we spend the money. Part of it was that take specific suppliers that can unlock them for the money and start paying for those things. But as we speak, I think it's really good to speak and look at the fact that probably 90% of them have been paid so far. And we are able to sort of generate, you know, some cash on the other contract. It's not enough though, it's not enough to keep us sustainable over the period of time. Coming to the cyber technology, Chair, we have not done much. We are mentioning it because it's our future state. This is where we want to enter that market of cyber technology. We are in discussions with the intelligence to ensure that, you know, we capture that particular market. We have not done any work. There's not much that has been done today, but the decision that it is something that we think should be in the focus of the man as we speak. Because if you look at the security industry, some of the information is in the security, private security industry. We want to bring it under one stable. This is our vision that, you know, we want to go there. You alluded to the security and the border control and law. I take note of the patrol and control. We don't do any patrols. The patrols are done by the DOD. We do controls because we manufacture certain instruments that are controlled by us, like for example the UAVs. That's why we mention control, because control is what we manufacture, what we can deploy in any situation and be able to monitor. And I think my colleagues will agree on that. So when we say we want to enter the space, it's basically on the control side to say we have the capability to and manufacture equipment. In fact, we have the that we do, so the people who are in Singapore that can do exactly that. With regards to the general future state, the cooperation with the private sector, yes, I've noted your concern with the private sector, honourable member. We have a good partnership with our friends in this. And of course, yes, the way the people of collapse as a result of our injury. And the investments are going, we are part of the member of the AND, which is the industry, which is the defense industry. And we are in constant discussions related to the issues pertaining to Jinel and how they can position Jinel as well and help Jinel to prosper. So we have a working relationship with them. The relationship is sound. It's not as sound as maybe it might be perceived for others, but it is very sound. And I'm sure my colleague and the friend coming to me from the test. I think you were talking about the balance of entropy because of the major countries there, honorable minister. If you look at the state of South Africa and the rest of the world, and if you look at the nature, they are more of a conglomerate when it comes to the defense industry. And as in penetrating the market, if you look at my order intake, if I go back to this particular slide again, if you look at the five-year window, there's virtually nothing. And that's how difficult it is to penetrate the market. Not that we produce inferior products, it's a case of competition. They'll protect their own sort of interests within their own state. It's something that they're not able to do in this particular one. And hence we find ourselves within for this. It is difficult, it has nothing to do with corruption or anything of the sort. It is just that it's a very protected market. And it is funded by the conglomerates, you know, within those countries. And we are sitting where we are sitting today because of those dollars of energy. Now, with regards to the 1.8, I said the 2.8 billion, we received 1.8, there's still 1 billion, but I believe that we're not going to get 1 billion, we're going to get something like 500 million and explain what the minister's budget is, you know, I think, a month ago. So yes, the 1 billion was part of the 2.8 that we discussed initially. So we got the 1.8 and the 1 billion is still extended. So our shareholder has made the application, and I'm sure we'll be able to get some relief. But it won't be a billion as far as I'm concerned. Well, Chair, if you look at the strategic initiatives, depending at what point do they materialize, we'll be able to generate cash to sustain ourselves. And if we divest this non-core business in half, we'll be able to generate enough cash for us to be able to do this. But it's a question of time. As you know, there's PFMA that we have to go through in order for us either to get out of the current contracts or even some of these assets and sell them. It's a process. It's a process that takes time. As to some of them, we have called it a process. I mean, we have started with the gear ratio. If you look at, if I can take you to the slide, if you look at gear ratio, we have taken the gear ratio to get out of the gear ratio. The foundry is part of the PNP. It's only a portion of the foundry. People who talk about PNP, they talk PNP as a whole. It's only a portion of the foundry that we say it does not form part of the value chain, and that portion of the foundry is the one that we want to move up. So we have started the process in making this application to the PNP and ensuring that, you know, and we reach the 1.5 billion and that we represent. So the process is ongoing, but the question of time is to when will they be able to monitor themselves in order for us to be able to be equitable. I hope that I've answered all of the questions. So
all right, thanks. That's fine, thank you so much. And Mr. Minister, are there any further questions, Mr. Moshe?
for church before there was a comment that was made with regards to the name and whether it should be sitting with DVD or the thing. And I think
that's fine.
We noted
the comment.
Yeah.
Sure. All right, Mr. Mutra.
I just have one or two questions in relation to what the GCO has just presented in terms of responding, as well as to the questions that were raised by Honorable Minister. Seemingly, it seems like there are components of denial that they want to get rid of. But my question is, initially, when Denel was still doing well, with those components being part of Denel, it was not a challenge. But recently, after they've encountered challenges, they are now beginning to say these components are problematic. What is the real problem? Are these components a problem, or do we have a problem with management and business model of Denel? Because I can tell you these components, they are going to dispose them, they are going to be in the hands of the private sector or the private people, and they are going to do well. Now, the question that still puzzles me is that, is there something wrong with the business model or with entities? What is the difference basically between a Denel as an entity that is owned by government and a private sector? Why would this component succeed? And it will not be for the first time. What caused the demise of Denel is because over time they've been selling this component to the private sector and collapsing Denel itself. And it seems we are continuing in that trend to say every time we are unable to run a business effectively and efficiently, we tend to blame some components to say, no, they are not doing well, we sell them, we'll end up having a shell of a company at the end. Because I can tell you, you want to venture into cyber, if it doesn't work, you are going to say, no, it doesn't work, let's take it out. Everything that you fail on, you must not take it out, you must ensure that it works. Because the reason why we continuously give you this guarantee or this bailout is because we want you to succeed. We don't want you to fail. But if your attitude is such that you are unable to sustain and make this component or this entire business a success, it becomes worrisome. Because in your presentation, you give us a picture that all will be well when these components are not with you. Yeah? But the reality is that you'll come back and still in future want to dispose some of the components until Denel is collapsed. It's left with nothing. So it's worrisome, because if you look, I think maybe the first step when he comes, he will also speak to this export challenge that the industry in its entirety is having, which I think it also affects Denel. So you are speaking of on your slide 9 of largest export contract receipt of around 6.3 billion. If you can expatiate, whether this is what you have in your order book, was it not affected by, what do they call it, the end user certificate? And the first point there, you say the last financial year you had the intake of 509 million, this financial year you are sitting with intake of 7.8 million with winnable orders of around 30 billion. But what makes it difficult for you to be sustainable if you've got this order? The first slide you say you've got a backlog. Maybe if you can expatiate, because mathematically I'm failing to balance this number. You've got a backlog of 17.4 billion, and which are the projects that you must still run or you are invested in to complete in the next 4 years or so. Probably you've now appropriated that money that you have, and you don't have that money anymore to actually complete those projects. And it all talks to how you manage your finances as a business, because I'm not sure how you do it. In the private sector, I know they will not compromise. They will not get into something that will not give them profit. And you know, in any project, timelines are very important, because time is money. If you are intending to finish, you have planned to finish Hope Hester at a particular point, and you are unable to finish it or follow that particular timeline, obviously you are going to run a lot. And now you are going to cry foul to say, probably these projects are not viable, they are not effective, they are costing you money, you are not making money out of it. But it will not be because initially when you calculated you were going to make profit, because of your inefficiencies, your inability to manage this project timeously has costed you a lot. At the end, you are going to shift the blame. Now, the picture you are giving us, can you just give us the real picture? You must not be shy to tell us where you have problems, because so that we can be able to assist you. But if you come and give us a picture that no, everything is fine now, we are on track, and 2 months down the line you will need a bailout, you are going to look a bit foolish. So we must avoid that at all costs. I think on my last question, this slide doesn't have a number. Oh, your contribution and Inel procurement spend. You speak of a couple of million that you have spent on black owned business, female youth, military veteran. Can you expand what kind of business are this one that channel to black people, female? I hope it's not only agency kind of a business where you say give us a stationery and they go and buy it from girls and then deliver to you. Because in a true sense of transformation, we don't want situation where young people, women are given, we are getting such reports and we say no, all is well, whilst they are just going to Marae, buy bullets and give them to you. To what an extent are they entering the manufacturing part of the components that you are using for your end product? Thank you, Chief.
Sure. Well, thank you so much, Mr. Monke. Shilembe, I saw your hand. After you, I will then take care of the speakers. Shilembe.
Thank you, Chairperson. One of the concerns that I think the department should look at, and I'm not satisfied with the way in the explanation, you know, that issue of the weak supply chain management. You know, I can see that while there are lessons learned and also the issues of improvement on in that area. But I don't know whether it's possible for you to tell us for how long you have been struggling with this weak supply chain management, and also tell us what are the causes of that weak supply chain management? Is it because of lack of capacity, or is it, I mean, because of the people who are there no longer, I mean, you know, prepared to comply with the systems that are in place? Chairperson, you know, we can have a dream in the department and a lot of things to be achieved. But if we can't afford, I mean, to manage the funds accordingly, and also, I mean, understanding if there is what we call economic decline, and have the management that is able to adjust itself to that situation. Yes, we all agree that there is what we call economic decline, but is the staff in the procurement section, I mean, well equipped, well capacitated to deal with such a situation? Chairperson, also, if, I mean, they have learned the lesson, what is happening with the issue of, say, the consistent management to those people who may be implicated, I mean, to have made the department to be in that situation? And also, I mean, the chairperson, are there any, I mean, time frames in place that one can be happy to say the current problem that is, I mean, talking to the department when it comes to the supply chain management is attended to? You know, when can we see the supply chain management being stable to do the work accordingly? Because we can't afford to essentially to say, well, the problem is being attended, but there's nothing in place that tells us when can we see the supply chain management working. To me, I mean, if one can be addressed on that question, it will tell me that there's going to be a good management of funds to address, I mean, what you need to do in terms of, I mean, getting the department, you know, when it comes to the procurement of safeties and good, you know, is in place. I think it may be, I can be assisted in that question. Thank you.
Okay. No, thanks, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Chair. I want to agree with my colleague here on the succession plan. And if they have, if you want us to assist you with your succession plan, then you must be honest with us to tell us exactly what is the problem and what is the challenges. But Chair, on slide 8. On the governance structure. They're saying that with all ex-co positions now filled, determined as of my new management team and the board to address the performance culture. But I thought that you would now report on the improvements and a progress report, for example, on page 19. On the improvements, you are just saying that the new GCOO and divisional CEO is focused on improving performance. What is the current status of and progress on your efforts to address the challenges? A progress report on that. But also, the new delegation of authority, is it working? And do you have systems in place to measure it? And on the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure, what is the status on the investigations thereof? But do you also have a tool on this? You just on the contributions and partnerships. Is there a tool to monitor the partnership? Or is it just that you spend on local business, you women, youth, and so on? Is there a tool to measure the impact on that partnership. Thank you.
Right. Is there any other question, colleagues? Right. No, it's fine. I'll now hand it back to you, Mr. Fatoni, just to respond to the question. But in responding, please note that you are not an entity that reports to us, to this committee in particular. You have your own mother department that reports to another committee of parliament. Our interest goes insofar as your operation affects the operations of this department. And we indicated at the beginning, we carry over 40% of our order book, and we have an interest in how you move things aside. I know there's a debate, until that debate has been resolved, as to where you will finally reside. For now, we'll leave it, we'll keep it as per the status quo. All right, over to you, sir.
Answer as far as possible. What about the fact? With regards to the entire payload that we are trying to move away, I think I've alluded to the fact that the A400, it was a strategic decision. At the time when the government and the European government decided to have a manufacturing plant in South Africa, there was supposed to be an inflow of business into this particular sector. And with the defense industry in the entire world, the deadlines, there's no business. There's nothing that is coming in. Basically, there's nothing in the A400. So we either have to keep on spending $250 million and keeping the resources there to maintain a few of the aircraft that come onto the market. So before, yes, the market used to be flooded with a lot of business that is coming into that specific area. Unfortunately, now there's not. So we either have to stop or we continue going as far as the two, one of the two that we have to take. Now, with regards to the other businesses that we are trying to move away from, the condition of the recap is that you will have to find a way of selling the assets that are non-core and non-strategic. That was the condition for the bailout. And I'm sure my colleague in the table will agree to this. It was a condition. So we are satisfying the condition of that bailout. To then say, where in this asset that we can say that are not of strategic nature, we have to sell them. And that's why we are carrying on in identifying some of those to satisfy the condition of the law. So we didn't sit back and say we are not going to do anything. Because if we don't do anything, we will continue bleeding money. That's a fact. And that's when the initial treasury is saying, I'll give you money on the condition that those assets that you don't use, that are not of strategic, I want you to sell them. And part of it is some of it in the property portfolio, some of them we are trying to identify them on the PNP. The reason why we identify PNP, we say PNP, that value chain of that is the first part of the value chain, is what you don't actually need. You can ask your the partners in the industry to do it for you at a very cheaper cost. So you are carrying an overhead yourself. Because remember, the PNP was formed a long time ago in the 50s. Everything is still the same. The equipment is old. So we can sit in here and say, do we keep it going as is with the less orders that are coming? It used to be supported by DOD in that regard. The work much is coming in. It used to be supported by the sub by from private sector. So there's not much that is coming in again in the same facility. So we have to identify into the entire value chain to then say, for us with the current orders that we have, how do we keep ourselves sustainable? And part of it is to say, let's identify the portion of that value chain that we think is costing you money, but is not benefiting you that much. You can do it at a lesser cost. So it's a cost-benefit analysis, not entirely to say, we are selling the whole thing. And I said that, Chair, to then say, people say we are selling businesses, we are selling certain aspects of the business that we think are not of any value, because we used to own the whole blue chain from the point where it will start till the end. But is it what you need as a business? You have to look at other ways. I'm not sure if I've answered you.
All right.
Can I
continue?
Yes. On the contribution spend, and I know you have alluded to the fact that you wanted the details share on the procurement spend. If I look at this slide, we try to summarize this particular slide and say we have spent so much on the on various aspects in the industry. I don't have the details to say what type of business we could have been. You know that our industry is a very intricate industry. Most of the work that we do, most of the suppliers, they need to be certified to supply certain components of what we produce. And it's a process to get everybody to a point where you can actually get certified by AMSCO to get people to produce a certain part, even if it's a small part. So we drive our own means to say, we have a shareholder which is DPE, they have put certain capital and say, we want, in as much as we have all of these intricacies in the system, wherein you cannot really nearly spend to everybody in the market, you can spend to a specific people, but we still want you to go and spend on this particular people. So I don't have the details as to, are they supplying paper, are they supplying food, are they supplying certain components that are not sort of a certified per se. That details is not available at the moment. But I will just give you the overview to say the industry is in such a way that the bulk of what we do is really certified, and you go through a whole lot of process, and it's an engineering process that we have to go through for you to get to the level at which you can really operate with the other players in the industry. So there was a question in terms of how long have we been struggling as Dinel. And I think if you look at the last 5 years, and unfortunately I don't have the slide in here, we have been in a liquid state probably for the last 3 years or 4 years. And as to what happened with the previous management, whether they presented to this particular committee, they presented a different view, I'm not quite sure of it. What we're presenting, we're presenting the SE state, where we are in today. So yes, indeed, we are struggling with the business. I mean, I think I've answered all of my residents saying, if you look at the 1.8 billion that we have, if we were to spend it one night, we have nothing, we have zero. So we really have to make some of the things to material for us to say, yes, we are in that sector. We are not of the group, not as yet, not by any shot. And with regards to the pipeline that is there, if some of the pipeline which is there does not materialize, the picture looks clear. Now, coming to your question with regards to the order book and explaining the order book and the numbers, the 7.8 billion is just an improvement. We had an order of the 6.3 on top of other small orders. The other small orders are the ones maintenance and so forth that deal with the supporting us. Over and above that, we secured this particular order in this financial year, and it has risen to 7.8 billion. So that's where it's large, because it makes the order book large in a year period that you secure an order. Yes, if you talk of the 17 billion of the backlog, these are orders that we have secured and signed the contracts on. We have secured them. Half of it is sitting in book. Half of this order is sitting in book. Which is then contracted between Dinel and AMSCO. And the rest are just small orders outside of the book. So this is what we have secured. The 30 billion is not what we have secured. It's still what we are chasing. This is potential. This is where we say there has been an RFP or RFQ. We have submitted our proposal, and we are hoping that we will achieve it and be able to get the contract. This is what is sitting in the pipeline. This is what we're chasing. It might be more than a very conservative approach, because it's really to speak to the big orders that we are seeing. They're visible, they're already out in the market, and we're chasing those. And it's a matter of competition. It might materialize, it might not materialize. It's a matter of competition. So I'm not quite sure if I answered your question again in the numbers. You see, the 17.4 billion is what we have secured. We have secured it over a period of time. There have always been levels in as part of the development of the hospital. And it's what we still need to execute. That we are saying it's covered in the period of war, it's what we still need to execute over a period of 4 years. But however, if we don't secure more orders, we might not have anything in the future. And hence we are changing the pattern of the putting.
Maybe, Chair, if you can relate to that to your project management timeline, because if you've got all those monies you have secured but you don't stick to your timeline, you are bound to lose money and you are bound to fail financially.
I couldn't have agreed with you more. If you look at my slides, I've alluded to the fact that there has been weak controls, and those weak controls are to the same fact that if you don't manage the schedule, if you don't manage your cost, you don't have people that are measured with the cost engineer that I spoke about, you're bound to fail. And some of these things were non-existent over the period when this contract was signed. Hence, we are in a situation where we find ourselves in. And we are trying to get out of the meeting corrective measures. And those corrective measures are employing people that are quite conversant with the program delivery. And that answers exactly the same thing that you're asking for. We have failed. I have alluded to the fact that the controls were weak. We were weak in supply chain, and the consequence of the weak supply chain is that as we speak, we don't have the head of supply chain that we're trying to recruit. Yet there are supply chain managers at a certain level who have some experience, and we are trying to beef up the supply chain environment from contract management to supply chain. If you look at the fruitless, coming to the honourable members here, ask the question in terms of the fruitless investment expenditure. Some of it, there were changes in law. There was what we call the IFRS law. It's a method of accounting. It's a financial method of accounting. Mm-hmm. So at the time where you get an order, it's the timing of when do you recognize an order? It's the question that you're asking and say, what does the 18 billion, what does it mean? Do you recognize the value now and say, if I got an order of 6 billion, it's 6 billion today. But if you look at the 6 billion, between the 2 years, you won't be getting much out of the 16 billion. You'll be doing what we call development work. That probably, whatever that you're going to claim, is a fraction of the 6 billion. But you're going to realize value of the 6 billion once you start industrializing the project itself, or the product itself. That would be, say, in 3 years' time. But then, previously, what used to happen is that that value would be recognized today. So it will be recognized today to show that we have a spike, like a profit, or whatever the case may be. But come to think of it, the profits that you're going to realize are not today, they're actually in the future. And that's when you're going to start seeing the money flowing in. So these changes in law on how you recognize these values, and what caused some of these fruitless expenditure, one. The other one, it has to do with the how DINEL used to be exempted to comply with the PFMA, and purely because of the work that we do. In a normal PFMA, you're confined to a specific contractor because that person provides you with a specific capability that it cannot be found anywhere else, or you want to keep consistency, then you can apply for confinement. So we used to be exempted from that. But with the IFRS law coming in, it says you cannot be exempted from that. In fact, you are no longer exempted from that. We have to comply fully with the PFMA. Therefore, it says everything that we have done at that particular point in time, from that context, keep it as a fruitless investment expense. So that's where we come in. So it's not a matter that supply chain was non-existent, it was there. But it's a matter of accounting, it's a matter of compliance that we find ourselves in that situation. And of course, yes, there has been some state capture, there has been some mismanagement and so forth. But it's a question of quantifying the value as to what value constitutes to a
a state capture, what really constitutes to a mismanagement, what really constitutes to a changing laws.
Okay.
With regards to the consequence punishment, we have a lot of cases that we have undertaken, and some of it has to do with all of this. And it's not only supply chain, it's all the other aspects of the business that we have implemented for consequence management. It's continuing, and then we are implementing it as we have found the regularities in the system. And with regards to the time frame, in ensuring that you know the supply chain is picked up, it's operating at optimal level. Like I said, we had a strategy session yesterday. We have presented what we think can work. The board is sitting with the speak today. They are deliberating on those issues. And we are quite sure that, you know, some of the proposals that we have put in place on the measures will be approved. And once they are approved, we'll be able to implement those outcomes. As to how long is it going to take for us to realize the value chain, I think the proof is the pudding within the eating. We'll have to look at the financial results and see what is there. I cannot really say in 2 years' time, you won't find it in a regular expenditure. All that I'm saying is that this way you can see if you expect it or not, because the results will then demonstrate that. But progress-wise, yes, we are implementing those measures that we think we should be implemented to ensure that we don't find ourselves in the situation that we were in before. As part of the government. And I think I have alluded to the challenges in my slides and how I'm mitigating those challenges. With regards to the DOA, I spoke about the DOA, that what the DOA had picked the DOA up, it is in the board sitting today. We hope that the DOA will be approved to ensure that some of the measures that we think, you know, should be able to help us in scaling the business forward, that DOA will be approved. So once it is approved, we implement it. In fact, we are implementing it and not being approved as we speak, because we feel that whatever that we have inserted into the DOA is a good, it's sort of a good practice, you know, in business. So we are implementing as we go. So with regards to the tool, to say how are we measuring the partnerships. It is a procurement tool. They measure this on a daily basis as to who does what, who is this person, where is this person sitting. So there is a tool that, you know, a supply chain uses to monitor and measure it. It's part of the outcome, it's part of our KPIs from our shareholder, which is DTE. We have to conform to those requirements, and we are doing just that. And I think they have a successful
question. Okay. Colleagues, maybe let's say this then concludes our interaction with the entity, DINEL. And we can only hope that your turnaround strategy deliver the results. And because you remain the hope of our department, and the different industry as a whole. I mean, you're a major player, as it were, and you create a lot of jobs in the defense industry sector. So we want to see you succeed. That's the point I'm trying to make. And that is taking long to for the heads to know. Talking about that you're doing something in terms of consequence management. And that is taking long. It's a cause for concern. But we are happy that the President has launched an FIU investigation, inquiry into matters concerning the mayor. And we hope that probably that will then get to the bottom of the problems that we said. What was once a thriving entity of government that somehow in the recent years got run down by the people, and we alluded to the issues that are the cause for it to be where it is right now. I mean, it is serious concern. And but again, we will still need information on the project, and that you have with the Department of Defense, the Department of Defense in particular, their status, each one of them, the budget and the timelines. Because only when you get that information that you see how far back you are moving on some of them. And two, where there has been prepayment on some, you indicate, and what will then become of that prepayment. I mean, if you tell us that the bailout was 1.8 billion, and 900 million rand of that was going to be used to pay your to pay the supplier, and I don't know where does that put the advance payment that the department gave you, and to deal with certain projects. But we'll get that report when we receive the full presentation on that. We must really thank you for the presentation today. You were candid, and we certainly hope that you succeed and that you deliver on the things that we are expected to deliver on. We'll then quickly move to take the presentation from the are you okay? Are you just you may yeah, excuse me. You want to say something?
No, that's enough. Just what you said. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, no, thank you so much. Okay. Yeah, we have colleagues from the Defense Industry Council, and but that presentation will be done by the sector, and you will also do the presentation on the work of the Secretariat that supports the NCACC. And in the meeting we had previously, I'm happy that the defense industry is here today, is represented by the executive director, Mr. Hamilton, who represents the AMD. And I also see the South African Aeroplanes, Maritime and Defense Export Council representative in the name of Mr. Trevor Ramen. And there's also a representative, I'm not too sure if he was at the meeting, of SAAB, Greentech Defense, but they're not here at the invitation. They're here because the meeting is open and it's public, and they have an interest in the matter that are being transacted in this meeting. We're really grateful that they engaged with them and they said the things that they said. But in your presentation, I'm sure we'll start with, in your presentation, the issue of the EUCs has been raised by Dinel, was also raised by the industry as one of, but I think they were more specific on the post export delivery inspection. I mean, why us in South Africa insisting on the inspection post delivery? And so we want to understand the rationale, the reason behind that section that requires inspection, and also that we were told in the last meeting that was once invoked. I think it was in the early days of our democracy where we went out to do the inspection, and it has not happened again since. And we also know that Germany is one country that insists on it, and that too has not used it quite often. So just give us information on that. And and also maybe you would tell us, because you'll be presenting on behalf of the directorate, and the current export deals that are coming under threat due to the issue of EUCs. And perhaps we'll then deal with other questions as we move along. I thought I should just open it up that this issue was necessitated by the discussions that we have had with the colleagues. And there again, the point that was raised is the infrequency of the meetings of the NCACC, you know, and it's really affecting their business. You talk to that and as to what is the department doing about it. I know that their meetings are scheduled, but there are times where they don't meet as often as it's required. And that has affected the orders that the, I mean the applications that they were expected to decide on. So okay, over to you, Secretary. You indicate which one you want to start with. I'm sure, but we'll deal with the update on the project last. Over to you, Secretary.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Members of the portfolio committee. My name is Sam Kuluga, I'm the Secretary for Defense. And the reason I am presenting on the requested by the committee on the matters of the National Defense Industry Council is because I chair the National Defense Industry Council and also be presenting on the Directorate for the Conventional Arms Control Committee, a directorate that also reports to the Office of the Secretary for Defense, and the DoD project as requested by the committee to address not all DoD projects as such, but those DoD projects that are categorized as work in progress because the Auditor General has qualified the department saying they must disclose work in progress projects, and the disagreement being that this work in progress is actually contracted by AMSCO, therefore they must be disclosed in arms groups. I think we have dealt with this matter before. For these three presentations, then I'm accompanied by the delegation from AMSCO, led by the acting CEO of AMSCO, as well as the delegation from the defense industry, since the National Defense Industry Council constitutes department and the defense industry, led by the Association for the Defense Industry in South Africa, that is the ANT, and also accompanied by officials then from the Department of Defense who are part of the Directorate for Conventional Arms Control Committee. I think the chair has welcomed all of us as a delegation, just to indicate who's accompanying us. When it comes to the presentation, I will start with the presentation on National Defense Industry Council. I request that I go through this presentation very, very quickly. Okay. I don't read the presentation because it has been circulated. I just talk to it so that people understand what is this animal, so that as one of the members of the committee, we can understand what is this animal called the National Defense Industry Council. The purpose is to present, as requested, focusing on the initiatives of the National Defense Industry Council that supports the defense industry. I will give the background, I will give the initiatives, then I will give the way forward. On the background, this National Defense Industry Council is established in accordance of the Defense Review of 2015 that called for the national reserve. This is a chapter of the Defense Review dealing with the defense industry in South Africa, which called for the establishment of the South African National Defense Industry Council, which is now called as NDIC. It was launched by Minister in 2016, and the mandate as reflected in the Defense Review is that it must coordinate the approaches. I usually summarize it as the three main focuses of the National Defense Industry Council. Number one, coordinate the requirements of the National South African National Defense Force and the functions and work of the National of the Defense Industry in South Africa to ensure that whatever the defense industry in South Africa is producing matches the requirements of the South African National Defense Force. Number two, to promote the transformation of the defense industry in South Africa. South African defense industry is one of those industries in our economy that is transforming very, very slowly. So the Defense Industry Council was formed really to promote that transformation within the defense industry. And then the last part being to promote the South African defense industry products and services abroad. When it comes to the issue of the governance, how it is governed, it has got its own constitution, chaired by the minister, but the minister delegated that chairmanship of the Defense Industry Council to the Secretary for Defense, and it meets regularly. And the membership is composed of the officials from the Department of Defense in various divisions and sections, and then it's also composed of DENEM as a state-owned entity and AMSCO, and composed of the representation from the defense, from the private sector, defense industry, which is represented through the ANG of this council. This council is also made of DGs from various governments, national governments such as the Presidency, Department of Public Enterprise, Department of State Security, Department of DECO, that is International Relations and Cooperation, what used to be the Department of Science and Technology, as well as the Department of Military Veterans, and the DTI, Trade and Industry, and the Department of Small Business. So as you can see, this is really a council formed between the government structures as well as the private sector structures to promote the defense industry council, defense industry products and services and as well. So the initiative, I'll start with the strategy. The strategy has been developed, which is now the defense industry strategy for South Africa, which is now awaiting to be placed on the website. There's been establishment of a defense industry fund. This defense industry fund has really established to finance the SMEs companies so that we can promote them, make it easy for them to enter the defense industry in South Africa. But what has happened is that AMSCO and AMG, supported by the DOD, they embarked on the process of establishing this fund. They went for the competitive process. The Creed Capital Partners, which is a private company called Creed Capital, was appointed now as a fund manager, and it was launched in June last year. And the main function of this fund is really to assist the defense industry, especially the SMEs, as of contract finance, trading finance, equity finance. And as we speak right now, this industry fund is busy raising capital locally and internationally so that they can have seed money to be used by the defense industry as they're entering. The MOU is being developed between the Department of Defense and the Industry Fund, the DOD, AMSCO, and AMG, and Creed Capital Partners. They are all members of that advisory council of government for direct international foreign finance. Financing and Investment has run right from the President and the DG. Another initiative is the Defense Sector Charter. This is the instruments and the tool that is used to promote the transformation within the defense industry. This code has been was effected on the 12th of April this year, 2019. It's a legally binding for the South African defense industry, and that those entities that derive 50% of their annual turnover from the defense industry must be measured on this sector code. And the this defense sector charter has got its own unique features, I think, from other economic, from other industrial charters that we know. This one, this is the defense sector charter. It includes the beneficiation for the inclusion of military veterans, localization, targeted procurement, as long as the lower threshold for the small and medium enterprises, and as well as the enterprise supplier development. The Minister of Defense is now, according to this charter, expected to appoint the defense sector charter council, which will monitor the implementation of this defense sector charter. Another initiative is that of a task team on TNL. Why on TNL? About 2 years ago when it was becoming apparent that TNL is running into crisis in terms of its economic viability. The Defense Industry Council decided to set up a task team on TNL that will try and diagnose the challenges and propose a solution and compile a comprehensive report for the Defense Industry Council to try and assist on the crisis that has been, on the impact that the economic crisis of economic viability of the Naval Service on the defense industry has done. On this initiative then, they looked at the deposit for liquidity challenges of the Naval, and they highlighted there, I'm not going to go through them, but the recommendations of that testing on the Naval was that there has to be better alignment between the Department of Defense and the Department of Public Enterprise and the respect of funding for strategic and sovereign capitals. The recapitalization we have heard from the executive of TNL describing the recapitalization, the private sector participation realignment with other key programs, such as those of the security cluster of government, that is justice, crime prevention, and security cluster, in respect of acquisition of the major equipment that are required in security, to say that TNL might be assisted, that they shouldn't just have Department of Defense as their prime customer, but because they then produce other security equipment, the whole cluster of the security cluster should look at also utilizing or acquiring their requirements from TNL. There are certain contracts that were running within TNL, especially between DOD and TNL, need to be reviewed to assist the TNL. I think that has already been discussed, and then support the broader local defense. This is what came out of the task team, and these recommendations are being implemented under the stewardship of the South African National Defense Industry Council, and implementation is being monitored. I think a lot of progress has been made actually in the implementation of these recommendations, as we have heard from the report of TNL with the turnaround strategy. I think it's not all doom and gloom as far as TNL is concerned. Actually, we can begin now to see the light at the end of this tunnel. The only problem is that the light is not going to come to us. We must go to the light. And TNL, I think, has developed a roadmap towards getting that light. So that we can get out of the crisis. We appreciate the work that was done by this task team on the other intervention plan. I think this really talks to what has already been talked to, that the challenges that have been noted that led to where DNL was really mostly was also associated with the decline in the budget allocation for the Department of Defense. And as a result, the impact that this was having still having, is that some companies are beginning to retrench and people are working on a shorter weeks, and of course the NERA is having a challenge towards paying them, but as we have heard, 90% of those outstanding invoices are now being settled. I think that will go a long way in helping for the defense industry as a whole to recover. But also the Defense Industry Council is one of the initiatives. We commissioned a study to look into the impact that this was having on the defense industry as a whole. In this regard, the task team studied about 303 local and international based companies and their reliance on the DOG for their businesses and the level of distress that they were following. It was discovered that about 18 companies that were dealing primarily with sovereign and strategic capabilities relied heavily on the Department of Defense funding and were very distressed. And this is really not due to the NERA as such, but it's due to the Department of Defense not able to support the defense industry through the acquisition of these products and services because of the budget reductions of the Department of Defense. And the intervention plan was developed to propose mechanisms that could be implemented to address the alleviating impact of these distressed companies. And these initiatives included designation of small caliber weapons and ammunition. Just to remind the members that South Africa used to be self-sufficient in producing small caliber weapons and ammunition. In other words, the police, defense, correctional service, home affairs and others, we used to buy our small caliber weapons and ammunition here in South Africa. But we have since lost this capability. Now we have to import it. They were only left now with ammunition that's being produced by Kenya. So there's a need to redress that and see how we can turn things around so that we can begin, rather than importing these small caliber weapons and taking jobs outside, we need to start re-establishing that capacity and capability inside South Africa for small caliber weapons production. And this is what needs to be taken to the security cluster, that we should stop buying these weapons from outside so that we can create jobs inside South Africa rather than have these jobs created somewhere else for South Africa. So this is one of the initiatives from the task team that was established by the National Defense Industry Council. And also to look into another element of trying to support the acquisition or the export of the defense industry products and services. Because most of the African countries are indicating that, yes, they would like to have the technology equipment from South Africa, but they would not be having cash as we understand it within their financial model. So the defense industry task team look at other more financial models that can be used. For instance, having these companies, what used to be called, in simple language, batteries. These companies can get minerals from a given country in Africa and then and use those mineral resources or revenues generated from those minerals in order to finance the acquisition of equipment. That's what we mean by resource-based alternative funding model. The export support administration, I think, is already up and running for the Defense Industry Council to assist the defense industry addressing various bottlenecks or obstacles of promoting export for the defense industry. For the first time, the Department of Defense Industry a South African pavilion in the Defense and Security Exhibition in Asia in Bangkok last week, whereby 19 South African defense companies exhibited their products and services, and hopefully they will be getting deals and contracts from that exhibition that took place last week in Bangkok, as financed by DTI with the motivations from the Defense Industry Council. The issue of the end user certificate has been identified as one of those bottlenecks that the defense industry in South Africa is facing for promotion of exports and consultation when we're dealing with the National Conference on Arms Control Committee regulations. The way forward is that they will present this small proposal on small caliber weapons that is being developed by the strategy to the JCPS after, as we have indicated, publish a defense industry strategy on the website, engage key stakeholders on the implementation of resource-based alternative funding model, and the minister to appoint the defense sector charter and to obtain a feedback from the National Conventional Arms Control Committee on the issue of end user security. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Can I then go on to the other presentations?
Please do.
So I will do all three before we go for discussion. Well, I think that will that will have to solve the question.
Let's do that.
So this presentation has been circulated, so I'm not going to read it. I'm just going to talk to it to draw your attention. This presentation is on conventional arms control. It's being presented in my capacity as the head of DICAT, that is the directorate for the accounting office of DICAT, as the directorate for conventional arms control committee. As directed, we will be then talking about the National Conventional Arms Control Act, the Cabinet Committee, the framework of arms transfer regulation for South Africa, as well as share pertinent information on the national control framework for promotion that affects the defense industry. The next slide is just looking at the membership. In terms of South Africa's membership to various treaties and conventions. We're not going to go through these treaties that are here, but just to talk about the Wassenaar Arrangement, which is the main treaty. So, as South Africa, we voluntarily agreed to be part of these international treaties that regulate the conventional arms. The Wassenaar Arrangement is certain countries that have voluntarily agreed to be part of this Wassenaar Arrangement which deals with regulation of export of conventional arms. So most countries that export conventional arms are part of this personal arrangement. Because of our being signatories to these various international treaties, it means then that we have an imperative that will have to guide the arms control. This is based on the international obligations on arms control, the various treaties that I've already talked to. I'm not going to go into details, and then we'll go to the strategic importance of us being part of such international treaties, because by being part of these international treaties, then it means that we are able to build our manufacturing sector to be part of, as part of the major exporters of controlled items such as the conventional arms. This will contribute to technology development and percolate into other secondary sectors by growing our defense industry. We can transfer it into other sectors of our economy, and by growing that defense industry through proper corporate governance, we are able to contribute to employment, as we employ about 15,000 highly technical jobs in South Africa. And the South African National Defense Force strategic defense capabilities, they lie well in the capabilities of the defense industry that is sustained mostly, not just through the internal customers, but also through exports. The arms control is really a government function that seeks to achieve this responsibility, accountability, transparency, and regular trade. And the National Conventional Arms Control Committee is the national authority for the conventional arms. The directorate, if we look at it, that's what we call the DK, is a secretariat to this National Conventional Arms Control Committee, which is a cabinet committee. And the secretariat serves to interface with the wider defense industry and all other relevant stakeholders. The function exists because there is a defense industry in South Africa that deals in products and services that must be regulated by government in order to have effect on the new value system in post-democratic South Africa that is sustainable. This function then is part of a wider government system of arms control, which also includes the South African Police Services Firearms Registry, as well as the DGI Non-Proliferation Council. So this, on the pillars of this arms control, we have the NCACC Act of 2002, as I mentioned, and that controls now these items, the conventional arms. And then we have the Non-Proliferation Act, which is administered by DGI, which specifically ensures the non-proliferation of weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons. We, in South Africa, as you know, we voluntarily disarmed and entered into the nuclear disarmament program, so we are not actively in that field. But we still produce components such as uranium and others that might be utilized, and DGI is the administrator of the regulation around this non-proliferation as stated in the non-proliferation act. The firearms control is a control is administered by South African Police Services. This relates to the act of the Firearms Control Act and Explosives Act. Both of non-proliferation, DGI, and firearms control are part of the National Conventional Arms Community and are part of the Secretariat as reflected in the, when we look at the policy framework now for the regulation of this control item, the NCACC is established in terms of the NCACC Act of 2002, as I have indicated, and the main mandate of the NCACC is to regulate the development, manufacture, production, trade, and transfer of conventional arms is we will be talking about controlled items, because these conventional arms defines which items are controlled, which falls under conventional arms or that falls under a firearm. The Act provides for detailed functions of the NCCC, and over and above this, the NCCC administers the regulation of foreign military assistance, such as and the prohibition of mercenary activity in accordance to the Mercenary Activity Act. The legislative framework for the National Convention on Arms Control is that to regulate first of all, I think these are just the various components of the Act. Number one, for the regulation, and then number two, for the Military Assistance Act, as I've indicated, prohibition of mercenaries. And these regulations are all regulated through a government publishing of these regulations in the government. To just briefly summarize the Act, the National Convention on Arms Control Act, it is to ensure compliance with government policy and implement legitimate, effective, and transparent control processes and the protection of economic and security interests for the country, and foster national and international confidence for the control of trade in conventional arms. I think the reason why South Africa is able to attract so much orders is exactly because most countries, they would like to purchase or obtain their items from a country like South Africa that is known as it is a well-regulated environment that is sustainable through the various regulations that we have. As I indicated, the committee of the NCC is a cabinet committee. The scrutiny committee is a various department, which is the secretariat that's coordinated by GK, and I chair the security committee, and the minister and the president chairs the NCCC committee. And the scrutiny is composed of defense, the airport, GDI staff, state security, and the defense intelligence. I've already highlighted on this NCCC structure, and here are the members of the NCCC, and these members of this cabinet committee is appointed by the president, and the members that are being mentioned here, they were appointed after the elections with the 6th administration. I think they had their first meeting in July, August, and it's chaired by the minister and the president, Minister Mtembe, made up of ministers as well as the deputy ministers that are mentioned in the slide. The secretariat is the nodal point for the Convention on Arms Control Committee, established in terms of the Act, and serves as the secretariat of the National Authority for Licensing, and another point for interaction with the South African Defense Industry. The command frame for the secretariat, which is a directorate within the Department of Defense, led by the Chief Director that reports to the Secretary for Defense. The Act also calls for the establishment of the NCCC Inspectorate, and the object of that inspectorate is to ensure that conducting the conventional arms control is in compliance with the Act, ensures the internal regulation, but also the compliance by those who are registered in the conventional arms control. This is the inspectorate that goes out to inspect various companies, defense industries, to ensure that they comply with the Act. But it also looks internally that within the secretariat administration itself, they audit our processes to make sure that they're compliant with the existing system. And also, they're supposed to ensure for the inspectorate that those who are participating in the transfer of ownership of these controlled items, whether they are buyers or sellers, are compliant with the NCCC Act. The functions then of the NCCC and TCAP is mostly the registration. This slide we are highlighting the processes of registering as being licensed to trade in control items. Simply put, if you want to trade in these control items, you must be registered and be issued with a registration certificate by the NCCC that you are now registered to trade. You cannot trade in control items if you don't have this certificate of the registration certificate. And so the NCCC, through and supported by the DKK Secretariat, issues various permits as part of this regulation. These are the registration certificates, as I indicated, that now you can trade in controlled items. Marketing permit, that now you can market a controlled item, either by going to exhibit for foreign exhibitions or for testing or for piloting, that we will issue. We need to have a marketing permit. Even if you are maintaining the ownership of that control item, the fact that you are going to market it somewhere, you need to have a marketing permit. Contracting permit is when now you are going to have transfer of ownership from one owner to the other through a contract. So it's almost like this is what causes really the major functions other than certificates and permits for that if we are going to export South African products and services, defensive products and services, or control items, you must get a contracting permit. And once we have given a contracting permit, then you can engage into a contract with that country to which these products are supposed to be exported. But you cannot physically send that item to that given country without, when you are ready to send it, you must get an export permit, because on our ports of entry and exit, you find the customers and the customs sections and other law enforcement agencies that will require you to demonstrate to display or disclose your export permit. And the same thing if you are importing, as well as conveyance. Conveyance is a very interesting permit. If you have exercised, let's say, in the suit, certain stakeholders might like to be traveling from neighboring countries through South Africa to go to the suit, or if certain items have to go through the territory of South Africa on their way somewhere, whether through the sea, air, or ground, you will have to be issued with a conveyance permit that you have permission to go through our territory for the purpose that you have described. This slide is part of demonstrating the same point that I have raised in various arrows, types of permits and processes that we have discussed. And the arms control processes, what kind of processes that you have to go through, from application that is submitted to DCAP, consideration first by the scrutiny committee in DCAP, where we review the application, look at the risk assessment and the mitigation of those risks of these control items being for the change of ownership of these controlled items, and then a decision is taken. The decision is taken by the ANC. They are the ones who approve or put the application on hold or deny comment. So when it gets to the NCCC, it is the NCCC that will decide whether that application for change of ownership, transfer of ownership, or sale of a controlled item is approved, put on hold until certain information is made available, or that it is denied. So, unfortunately, today we might not be able to resolve all the issues that are coming through from the defense industry in terms of why certain applications were denied or not denied, or why the end-user certificate is processed in the manner that it's processed, because the decision for that is taken by the NCC, which is a cabinet committee. So it's going to be important then for the committee to invite the cabinet committee, but as the chair of the secretariat, DBACC, I'll try to at least provide as much information as possible, although I will, might not be able to provide the reason for approval, disapproval, hold, or denial, since that is the decision of the NEC. So the approval process, as I indicated, it is considered on a case-by-case basis. What I would like to highlight in that regard, in terms of provision of information, is that this approval process is guided by Section 15 of the National Conventional Arms Control Committee Act. And that Section 15 provides guiding principles and criteria for consideration of an application. In summarizing, the criteria that is used in the approval process of the Section 15. I think this slide, safeguard on transfer, provides a summary of what needs to be taken into account. Firstly, we need to take into account the UN Security Council resolutions and other international norms and practices in the trading of such controlled items. We have to take into account the governance of the contracting parties. Simply put, we have to avoid, and the Act specifically says that we must avoid contributing to internal repression of the buying party and violation of human rights by the party. So I think the main criteria is five. Number one, I'm not going to use this order, but I'll use my order just to summarize the criteria. Number one, safeguarding national interest. Is it in the South African interest to give such a permit for sale? Number two, we have to avoid contribution to internal oppression and violation of human rights. Number three, avoid escalation of regional conflict. Is there a regional conflict where this control items are supposed to go? We must ensure that we don't escalate that regional conflict. Number four, we must take into account the risk of diversion. If these control items go to the person who's applied for the ownership of these control items, is there a risk of diversion that they will be diverted to another party or fall into wrong hands? And the fifth one, those that are highlighted in the international publication as reflected in the United Nations. So those are the main five ones. National interest, stability of the country that's buying, the regional conflicts in where the control items are going to, the risk of diversion, and UN arms power. That's the summary of Section 15 of the National Conventional Arms Control Act, which really helped to, when we are as a scrutiny committee at DCAG, we recommend to the NCCC cabinet committee whether to approve or not to approve. And when people are recommending to approve, we have to say we have taken into account all of these 5 points. If we recommend not to approve, we have to say we recommend not to approve because of this. think this slide mostly focuses on the process flows as I have already summarized it. I'm not going to go into details, and this is the level of assurance that has been indicated, but that the Section 15 will be, it's an assurance that Section 15 will be complied with by South Africa, but also by the other countries that is by. Now, let's come to the end user certificate. Now, Section 16 of the National Convention on Arms Control Act talks to the accountability of the country to which arms are exported to. The certain accountability that this country where you are exporting to will be accountable for this. And the main tool and instrument that is used, Section 17, is to make sure that the country that the control item is going to is accountable, that country must issue an end user certificate. There will be some slides, although I'm not going to go into details with them, but that will say who issues the end user certificate. We don't issue the end user certificate. The end user certificate is issued by that country that's going to use the item. So it will be the embassy of a given country, so that the registered a company with a registration certificate will have to go to the embassy and say, please issue an end user certificate so that I can present it to the NCACC or to DCAC, so that we meet this end as part of my application. So the company then that is going to send the product goes to the country to produce this end user certificate. Now, this end user certificate, when you look at our regulations, is put in as an attachment. So it's an attachment that as an end user application, end user certificate application must be filled by that country that is to which this item is being transferred. So when under general when you discuss the end user certificate, the tendency is to say, oh no, the end user certificate is not being issued, or the country doesn't want to issue the end user certificate. Oh, there are no issues with this end user certificate most of the time, because there are five items that must be mentioned, that must be filled in the end user certificate. There are five. Out of that, it's only item number three that countries have problems with. Now let me tell you about item number one. Item number one of the end user certificate is just the name and address where the control items are going to. The country that's buying must tell us the names and addresses. Item number two is description. These are the items, these are the quantities, and this is what it's going to be. And item number three is an undertaking that the country that is buying the control item must make an undertaking that they will not transfer the ownership of the items they are buying without the permission of the South African government. That they are not going to transfer. And then item number four is the delivery verification that once they receive, they will issue certificate that they have received it. And then the fifth item is they have to fill up a certificate, fill up that part to say that they're actually authorized to issue the end user certificate, whoever is issuing that end user certificate, that is authorized. So those are the main five items. Now when it comes to item number three, that is undertaking that they will not transfer. In writing, if this section that deals with the undertaking by the country that they will not transfer the ownership of this item to another country says, it is agreed that on-site verification of control items may be performed by South Africa, by the server. It is agreed that on-site verification of the control items may be performed by South African authorities. So that's where the problem starts. Most countries, they have no problem with that. But yes, it is agreed that South African authorities may undertake on-site verification of that control item. Then certain countries have a problem with that, saying that it's a violation of their sovereignty. And these countries are UAE, Saudi Arabia, Oman, those are the three ones. So otherwise, there is no issue with the end user certificate. It's part of the regiment of ensuring that there is no diversion. And it's part of the regulatory arrangement for any processes of the control. So the question then, I think that you probably engage the executive on it, is there any way where we can find, where we can ensure that we ensure non-diversion while looking into the issues of on-site verification? Is there any way to do this on-site verification? Can we, for instance, I'm just making an example, say that when indicated to the two, through their bilateral agreements, the two countries, we engage in a process to ensure that there's not been any intervention. Or should we stick to the word "if agreed"? It is agreed. It is agreed that the on-site verification of control items may be performed. So shall we stick to the word "it is agreed" that on-site verification may be, or shall we say if necessary, through bilateral agreements and processes, the two countries will ensure there's not any diversion? And just this is what you can then engage the NCC. Then you have one school of thought that says no, it must be agreed on site verification. There's another school of thought that says it's possible to say through bilateral agreements will ensure there's no diversion. Leaving that to the lawmakers, which is why we voted for you. I think those are the main issues really for the control, and this is where all the work takes place. Yeah. Thank you.
Good. Right.
I think we can take questions on this and then the last one is the first.
In fact, on the project you just presented, we'll take discussion at some other time. In view of time.
Okay.
But I will see how it goes. But let me just start the discussion on this one. Mr. Maren?
I concur with your observation in terms of the project.
Yeah, okay.
Secretary, thank you very much for both presentations. I want to start off with the first one, the index one. Just on your slide with regard to the Defence Industry Fund, you haven't given us much information with regards to whether that fund is operational, how big is that fund, by whom is that fund administrated, etc., and to what extent has it already been financing projects, and to what extent. Because, I mean, you know, small amounts might be not worth much for the industry, but the significant ones are very important. Then further, when you talk about the task team on Dindell, There's a few recommendations, but I'm not sure whether this is realistic. You know, you might shoot for the stars, you know, hopefully land on the moon, and shoot for the moon and land on the ground. So I'm not quite sure what your strategy is here, because there's no one that knows better the financial situation of the DFG, that knows about the recapitalization. We've just heard that the extra 1 billion rand will probably be much less than that. In terms of the economy, it's unlikely that there will be more. So, you know, how realistic is that recapitalization? And then also with regards to the reset of DoD contracts, I mean, you know what has been provided over the medium term. I'm just wondering, how will that be funded? And whether this is a realistic recommendation? Because, remember, paper can't complain. They will never object paper, because you can put anything on paper, but eventually it's the implementationable, and how is it implementation? You've mentioned about the light in the end of the tunnel. Are you sure that's the end of the tunnel, or is it the oncoming train? I'm just, you haven't qualified that, so I'm just concerned about that. Then in terms of the intervention plan, again, you know, we have seen what is the provision over the medium term, and even a phase out of the SDA. And I'm just wondering, you know, where would the budget allocation come from, or, you know, whether you can share anything in that regard. On the last phase, the way forward, you are saying that you are await feedback from the NCACC on the issue of the N certificate. Now, you've just said that you are the secretariat of DCAC. Now, you have obviously written to yourself. Can you confirm whether you have responded to yourself on that outcome yet, and if not, why not? Because, I mean, you sit in both positions. Then with regards to the NCACC, because of the lack of time, I will only go to the end user certificate issue. And I want to ask whether that requirement is that for the on-site inspection, the agreement, is that in legislation? So in other words, do we need to amend legislation to look at that? Or is that a regulation, or is it just a some form in the contract that has been decided on? But then also, is that a UN requirement for the on-site inspection? Because if it's a UN requirement in terms of the arms control conventions, then all the UN members would have abided by that. If it is not in terms of the UN, what is the argument and the reason for adding this? Now, on your last, right in the last, you said that, you know, we can either, some schools say stick to it, some schools say change it. If you look at the slide that was given to us, basically all our export is only to those countries who object to it. So if we do not look at it, then we have got nothing. Then we haven't got a Danel, then we haven't got a defense industry. So we must also be realistic about that. If we stick to it, then we say for implication we agree to the dismantling and disfusion of the total Danel and the industry. So you know, we can beat around the bush as many times as we want. Eventually it is about this obligatory inspection that may be done. My guesstimate or my view would be that the two options that you have said is rather to have it in terms of bilateral agreements. Because the moment that you enforce it, we have already seen that those countries are looking towards other countries who don't put that up. Now, if it is a trade barrier, then we have to break down the trade barrier, and we have to protect our own industry and even our own defense forces. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you so much. Is there any other question on this? Yeah, colleagues are covered. I think Mr. Malay asked if this and this insistence on on-site verification is in the legislation or is a requirement by the United Nations, or you know, is it provided under any treaty or international instruments that we have actually committed ourselves to? And how are the other countries dealing with it? We know Germany has got one. The researchers have brought that up for me, but they've never, I think especially the inspection, they've done it once. And we also have done it once in the country. It's one of the things that fall introduces, you know, if you've not been applying it for a very long time. So let's look at that, and then I think I agree. And it so happens that it affects the countries that with whom we are wanting to chase those projects up to the value of $30 billion. And I'm also, I think you were speaking for yourself and the NEM, the industry as well, and they have been complaining about the same issue and the extent to which that has actually affected the affairs. And you may want, but I think you've given us some combat here on this one. It's not your issue, but you can only just talk on the how strong the requirement is. But as to how we want to deal with it, we will deal with it with the power that we have.
Maybe the secretary must put up his one hand and then put up his other hand. Say, now I'm talking to that guy. Now I'm responding to that guy.
How much is that there?
Actually, Honourable Murray is more right. I'm going to start with that and then we'll skip this. The main issue. Before I get to it though, I'm sorry, if you can just prepare your response on the fund. I'll give you an opportunity. But also, the other one, Mr. Mara, I'm not going to go into details much. The intervention plan by the task team, that's what you call it. The task team came up with the intervention plan, came up with recommendations. And unfortunately, most of them were dependent on budget of the Defence of Defence, which therefore, like some aspects of the Defence Review, are not implemented. So some of the intervention plans are not implemented because of the budget. But some of them we are already implementing, which we are coordinating with all the stakeholders, especially within the department. We are now part of, for instance, we make it out of that process. We are now part of the working group that has been established by National Treasury and GTI and the economic cluster on growing the South African economy, whereby on the priorities that they have stated, the aerospace and defense is now priority number 5 as part of the high-tech priority for the promotion of for growing the South African economy. That needs to be developed as a master plan. Like DGI would check, will say our best practice was around the automotive industry master plan. Can then the defense industry now develop a master plan for the aerospace and defense industry like we developed for the automotive, where incentives can be developed, whether, I don't know the incentives, the details of it, but to involve the taxation, jobs created. So the DTI has already said, just like we grew the automotive industry where BMWs, Mercedes, and all of them now manufacture South Africa for export, we want the defense industry to be given the policy clearance along the same line. So that has to really help with a good work in terms of certain things that can be implemented without affecting, that are not necessarily dependent on the on budget allocation. The reset of contracts, I think, simply meant to say if the variation order, what you call CBO, contract variation order, if if you couldn't deliver with this contract, can we then renegotiate this contract through a CBO so that at least we can find a way, in other words, adjust, review your specifications, your amount, your budget, your price, and everything. That's what is meant. But in terms of implementation, I think the devil is in the implementation. Whether this light at the end of the tunnel is a train coming or is a light of the end of the tunnel, I think it's a light of the end of the tunnel. But I agree with you, Honorable Marie, maybe depending how you look at it, it might just be a tail coming again, but this one, I'm sure. The end of the tunnel light that was closing. I think things will happen with Daniel. I think from now on, Daniel just needs to be assisted properly by this body of Portfolio Committee on Defense, and also to be assisted by both the legislative as well as you. Now, I hope the judiciary as well can join in helping Daniel, because I heard that all three spheres of state must work together if we are to assist in this regard. Now the feedback on the NCC is true. I think Honorable Mara is right to say, did I write to myself? Because one sits where one is sitting. But we can indicate that yes, we have received from the defense industry, they have written as AMD, they have written as individual companies, and we have received these issues that the individual companies, and what I have done was to refer the matter to NCCC, all of this communication. And but as a department that is within our office, we have written to the state law advisor seeking for legal opinion exactly on the question that Honorable Mara. So we have a legal opinion in that. And that's what it is. It's an official legal opinion from the state law advisors who advise the state how to manage this, whether is it a regulatory requirement, I mean, it may be in conflict with other government laws or international practices. And they have given us their legal opinion, which really in this case I have communicated to the NCHPC, and they are applying their mind, their legal, to that legal opinion. I think it's fair to say that they are applying their mind to the legal opinion. But as to what is interesting, I know it was mentioned in the legal opinion, but in terms of where we stand exactly, is that I'm going to give it now in terms of high level. On a high level, the Act says, let the end user make an undertaking that there will be no diversion. That's all it says. Let the end user make an undertaking that there will be no diversion. It doesn't say that let the end user, the Act doesn't say let the end user commit to on-site. And then the regulation then operationalized it and say yes, they must be ensuring undertaking that there is no diversion. And then it put an attachment B to the regulations. Attachment B is safe, it's the engine certificate itself. When you read the endless, now this is the attachment of the end. So this issue of undertaking that the on-site verification is in the attachment of the regulation.
It's not part of the regulation.
Not
in the code of the regulation.
No, it's not. And it's in the end of the which is attachment B to the regulation. So simply put. Now, to answer the question directly, we can just change the attachment. number two of the attachment, make undertaking that through bilateral agreements will ensure no damage. We can just change that. And that's all we need to do. We don't have to even touch the regulation. And then we can just have that and say, we have changed them into the regulation. So the argument that comes this way is that it says, no, you are weakening the regulation. The best practices, you must have outside verification. There was a time when the weapons that were meant for Jordan end up in India, and we had to go and visit it within the commitment of on-site verification. We wouldn't have time. So I will leave that debate to that meeting. I have gone through it for the past 6 months. I can even sing it in my sleep. Who says what?
Thank you so much. Mr. Shilembe?
No,
I'm Scott. Can you take Shilembe? I'll come back to you. Sorry,
Chairperson. I missed something here when it comes to the NDIC second under government. That it is according to the constitution, it must be chaired by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans, but that has been delegated to the Secretary for Defence. But also it says it must meet once every quarter. And I'm just checking now. By saying that power of chairmanship is delegated to the Secretary of Defence, are we saying the minister does not attend these meetings quarterly? If meetings are held quarterly, and in the absence of the minister, how does the minister get informed of what is happening? And also, have you been able to comply and adhere to the undertaking of meetings quarterly as per the
yes. All right, fine. That would be that question. And the other question that you did not respond to, Joseph, is another the infrequency of the meetings of the NCACC that has an unintended consequences. On the industry. So I think the point was very sharply. I think this year that there was a lull, a very long lull, and with the promise that the meeting will happen soon after the NCACC meeting will happen soon after election. But then it had to wait again until the body was constituted, and it took months. 2 or 3 months before it was properly constituted or even met as a board. And during that period, you have the permits, application for permits lying on the table, possibly with you, that cannot actually be acted upon because the NCACC is not meeting. And so I understand that because it's part of the chain, it's got to swing into action as and when it is. Very important part of the chain. It's got to swing into action as and when it is needed, so that we don't affect the timelines of the various companies in the industry. And the over to you, sir.
Thank you very much. I think, yes, I would confirm that the South African National Defense Industry Council is meeting every quarter, and also to confirm that the interaction structure as to between them, the minister and the office of the secretary, is conducted through an existing forum, which is COD, Council on Defense. Council on Defense meets every month, and in the Council of Defense, I always put ENDIC as a standing matter. So all the matters of the defense industry will be on the Council of Defense. Council of Defense is the structure of the defense, the structure by the Defense Act, chaired by the minister, where members are Chief of the Defense Force, Secretary of the Defense, Deputy Minister, and GMP, since it is the Minister of Defense. So with this forum, Council on Defense, the Minister gets informed of all the interactions and decisions of processes of the ending. So in that regard, because of the function of chairing ENDIC, is delegated to me, she does not attend the meetings of the ENDIC, but she gets informed of all the activities. On the issue of the frequency of the NCC, the NCC meets every month, the last Thursday of the month, which means the next scheduled meeting is tomorrow. And I agree with the chair that during the process of elections, as you know, it meant that if the elections were on the 8th of May, there was no meeting then by the end of May, because by that time maybe a new majority was not established. If there was no meeting in May, by June and July, cabinet committees and everything else were being established, but because this committee, I think, was only established in July, therefore had a meeting in August. And then if it met in August, it meant that it had a backlog of it had not met. The last meeting would have been, if they met in August, the last meeting would have been in that. But I think elections happen once in 5 years, thank God. So this is not a thing that happens all the time, but I can understand the impact that it had. But looking at those issues, there are certain processes that I've been setting in place on that if there are applications that are meeting the deadline, the industry should write direct to the secretariat and say, we have a deadline, can we please ensure that we meet this deadline for this and that, in which case we have an arrangement with the NCC that such matters can be brought to the chair. Chair can give an approval which is subject to verification by the committee of the NCC. So we are doing something.
All right. So, no. We'll then meet with the NCC on the issues. It's good that we have had this opportunity with you, because the sector is the engine of the NCACC, and so we know now, in Kasa's terms, what issues to raise with the NCACC, because all the administrative issues and other issues have actually been raised and cleared with you and cleared by yourself.
I will try to be here to support the NCACC.
That is right. Yeah. And but as to whether the decision when the chair takes approves the application subject to the committee meeting at a later stage is holds water. It's a different matter altogether. We'll raise it, because the law requires that it be a committee. In other words, the chair in committee. that must take the decision. But we'll discuss that and take advice from the legal people. Because it's when we make arrangements, you know, ad hoc arrangements, in the hope that they will hold water, and then end up relying on them and not meeting as often as required. And the problem is when later we find out that what arrangement, the ad hoc arrangement we put in place was weak and was not backed up by the legal position as it were. But we'll look into that. There was an issue that, thank you very much, Sector. There was an issue that the arms corps is going to deal with. And at least may you just come in on that one so that we make a ruling on how we deal with the working project presentation.
I think it has to do to share, has to deal with the health minister fund.
Oh, I see.
Yes, the fund has been established, but obviously what is still outstanding is a contractual agreement that needs to be put in place between DOD and the fund manager that has been identified. And the fund has a target of about to raise capital to a tune of about 1.5 billion. They are busy, you know, with the fundraising initiatives, you know, communicating with various potential investors. I must say also that it is the expectation that the fund managers will have to go out in the financial market, normal financial market, to raise capital at a very favorable rate for the SMEs. You know, who will then be able to approach the fund based on either they have a contract with us and projects that are within the defense space, and they will be assisted as such. But I think those modalities, once there is a relationship established formally, it is expected that even those who have pledged will make those commitments. And then we started with the disbursements, you know, early in 2020, if all goes well. But I can also ask one of our colleagues, member of MDIC, Mr. Hamilton, to maybe just share a little bit in terms of the latest information pertaining to the developments in this regard. But it's progressing well, that's all I can say.
Just quickly before that, Chair. So in other words, it's not necessarily all equity funds. It's going to be debt, raising debt in the market. So,
yes.
And also if there can be indication of debt versus equity.
Okay.
You operate like a bank.
Like a bank.
All right. And thank you so much. Can we then quickly move off to the next item? I don't know who was going to do the presentation. I can see it's on the letterhead of AMSCO. And it means that you are still not complying with the AG's requirement. That is got to be, in other words, we are not going to hold, AMSCO to account on the work in progress. Because it is not in their books, financial books, that transaction happens, takes place. It takes place in your books. You know, the financial transaction happens in their books, and the accountability is placed on them. And they can account up to, you know, up to a point, but they still have to complete the accountability on all the projects. Maybe let's say we're not going to take this presentation today. We are meeting in February with the department to take two quarterly reports. It's the second quarter and the third quarter. Right, it's on the 5th of February. I want to add a third item to that. I'm sure you're taking note of an audit action plan. In other words, we want to know how is the department acting on the audit findings of the auditor general. That obviously includes this particular item. I'm sure by then this matter would have been clarified. But there shouldn't be any debate, effective. You are accountable. The transaction happens in your account, and you are accountable. The next time we meet, and you'll be telling us how far you have met the AG's requirement on this particular issue, where he says, we have been asking for work in progress on your project, and that report has not been forthcoming. You referred us to AMSCO, and that's not where this thing is happening in AMSCO. So probably let's leave it at that for now, and we thank you for the effort you have done, but we want to shift the accountability to where it belongs, to where it belongs. That is the subject. Do you want to comment on that subject before we close?
No, thank you very much, Chair.
We'll
comply.
Yeah, thank you so much. Baba U, the executive director of MD.
So we'll be sitting quietly because we are not presenting today.
Correct.
I would just like to make one comment out of the subject presentation around the NCCC.
No, let's not comment on that now, okay? Because we want to just report it. Okay, so as long as it's not going to open up this debate.
It's not a debate.
Sure,
right. There's four objectives. It's compliant. I think they do it very well. It's effective, it's legitimate, effective, and transparent. Very effective, but it's neither effective or transparent from where we sit, because we are not able to interrogate it and get the reasons for some of the decisions we get. It's supposed to protect economic and security interests. The economic interests, I think, we are seriously compromised. And it's also meant to foster confidence, which I think has been destroyed both locally and internationally between ourselves and our clients. And the Section 15 is focused on the risk of diversion. These countries are saying, we will sign the first condition, which is what we will use this for. We will sign the second condition, which is that we will not export without your permission. We will sign the third condition, which is that we will not modify. What we are not allowing you is to say you will inspect. So they are saying, effectively, they will comply with these three, which take care of diversion. So what then is the issue? So when the committee does meet tomorrow, I think this is an issue that has to be threshed out. And unfortunately, we can't wait for much longer before the matters are resolved. As we said last time, the job losses have taken place. Some contracts have been cancelled. And alternative suppliers have been sorted.
Sure. No, it's fine. We're meeting on the 5th with the NCFC to take these matters up. Colleagues, with that, I know we have depleted. May I release the officials and the colleagues from Dinel and the defense industry so that we can just decide on how we want to deal with the other items that are still on the agenda. I know we are troublesome with our quorum. Thanks so much, sir. Okay, thanks. Okay, thank you so much. So when you meet him, you